Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
I'm Jen.
And, hey, Jen, happy pod-iversary.
Happy pod-iversary!
You and I have been doing this for a year.
I can't believe it.
Right?
I feel like we just started.
It does feel that way, and we've talked about so much already.
Yeah, and so much more yet to come. I feel like we've just scratched the surface.
We really have. Today, we just kind of have a special little episode for you. We are going to be taking a little trip down memory lane with some of our favorite bits from past podcasts. So if you've just started listening, maybe you can, track down some of these old episodes and give them a listen. That's pretty awesome. So 1 year ago, Jen.
Yeah.
This came together. Do you remember how this all came about? Because I apparently today have the memory of a goldfish and I don't I can't remember anything, but I do remember you contacting me.
I did. Yeah. I remember it. I treasure it. It was like kind of like one of those sort of like wonderful moments of my life. So
aww.
Yeah.
It was kismet.
It was. It really was. It kind of all happened for me. It all happened. I'd had a little bit of podcasting, very limited amount of podcasting experience as a guest on the XCast podcast. I'm a patron of theirs. Mm-hmm. And so as a patron, I was allowed to come on occasionally as a roundtable guest when a fan roundtable episodes and a few other kinds of episodes too. So I'd been on a couple of XCast episodes and super nervous, but as I did it, I enjoyed it more and more. And I started to feel like, hey, we did like a shipper special on the XCast. And I was like, I want every day to be shipper special in Jen's world. And I was like, how can I make this happen? I didn't know where to start. And it just kind of kicked around in my head as just like this dream. Like, I would love to be on a podcast. I'd love to co-host a podcast someday. And then I went to Montreal for Comic-Con last year and saw David Duchovny, Mitch Pileggi, and William B. Davis. It was awesome. And that was my first con. And I think there was like this moment. I mean, being at a con is always very exciting anyway, so it amped up my fandom and kind of like got me like excited and ambitious, like what am I going to do about this? And honestly, I seem to remember like there was a precise moment when I was at the William B. Davis Q&A event when I looked and saw that every single person at the microphone about to ask a question of William B. Davis was a man. And I thought, no, this is not right. So first of all, I got up and asked a question, which I've never done before at one of those things. Mm-hmm. But especially when you're talking William B. Davis off the heels of the end of season 11. And we got to have a female voice here, you know, asking a question about his character. And so that's when I thought, no, we need more women doing, you know, interesting X-Files critical analysis, that there's room for more female voices here. And I want this to happen. And I want to be on a podcast about the X-Files with another serious X-Files fan who is also a woman. And I knew you from having listened to X-Files Diaries in its sort of previous iteration. And I knew that you were great and loved your style and loved that show. And around that time, you kind of tweeted to me because you'd heard me on the XCast and said something like, you know, that was cool. And I was like, oh my God, Eddie thinks I'm cool. And I was like fangirling about the whole thing. Like, could this actually happen possibly? I don't know. And I actually, when I was in Montreal, also met up with Elise Wax, a friend of yours and a friend of mine. And I was kind of bouncing this idea off of her. And, you know, I'm like, is there any chance you think that Annie would consider doing a podcast with me? And like, is she cool? Like, I mean, you don't know people from Twitter, whether they're like, they may turn out to be total fruitcakes in real life. But I knew Elise had met you in real life and she like vouched for you. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to try this. And I didn't know what was happening with X-Files Diaries because I knew it had been a couple months since a new episode had come out. And I was like, oh, that like my dream team would be to have Annie on this. And so I sent you a DM and I was like super nervous. Like,
aww.
I like drafted like all these different versions of what I would say exactly. And I was like, okay, like I'm maybe not here for days. It's fine. Just calm down, Jen. And then like within like an hour, you'd already like, you just like very casually wrote back and said, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And I'm like, oh my God, is it?
Well, let me tell you my kind of feeling on this, because I was totally in the same headspace as you, because I have been on this podcast before you with two dudes, and I love Nick and Charlie. They're awesome. But it's like, you know, when you're talking about the show, you're going to come at it from a different perspective that maybe they're not going to appreciate in the same way. Mm-hmm. And I knew for a fact that like, if I continued doing this show, especially if I continued doing it with you, that it would be completely shipper oriented, and we would kind of re-angle this podcast, because I wanted the opportunity to do that, and I knew that I wasn't going to get to do that with Nick and Charlie. It wasn't going to happen. And it's funny, because when we're on Twitter, like, the fandom feels kind of skewed. I don't know if that's just because of Twitter and the amount of and the people that I interact with, but the most of them are women, and so I was surprised to find out that like there weren't really many X-Files podcasts. I mean, there are a few that are women. That specifically want to focus on the shipper aspect of the show, which I think is a huge faction of the fandom. So yeah. And we didn't know really what we were going to be doing because the show was over. I imagine that if it came back for another season, which none of us expected it to, that we would continue. But I also could tell that like I was sort of off on this sort of I'm still obsessed with this show and you guys are not. Like, I already kind of knew I was in a different place, and they weren't going to probably be interested in continuing to do it in any sort of regular, you know, iteration after the show's over. You know what I mean? Because they also don't, they're not quite as crazy fan as me, and they're not as well versed in the show as me. So they probably would not know what I was talking about half the time, as is anyone who's listened to the old iteration probably knows. But yeah, it was such a great sort of moment that you sent me that, because I had actually been thinking about like, God, how would I keep this going? Because I don't think I could keep it going the way that it is now. And so you kind of sending me that message sort of fell into my lap at the appropriate moment. And I was like, yeah, this is perfect. This is going to be great. So, and the rest is history, Jen.
It really is. It just, everything came together like really quite quickly. I mean, I think it was just a matter of like maybe 3 weeks from the time I emailed you or DM'd you from the time that we started recording. Mm-hmm. And like, we had ideas right from the get-go that, you know, things just came together really well. I mean, we had interacted a little bit on Twitter, but, you know, we didn't really know each other, and I wasn't quite sure how this was going to go exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, it came together really smoothly, I thought, like better than I expected.
Yeah.
And we had a lot to learn, obviously, along the way. I have learned a lot in the last year, which is great because I love learning new things.
Yeah. You've learned a lot of editing.
Yeah, I didn't know a damn thing about how to edit anything in terms of audio before. I didn't know the first clue about how did you get music together with words? Like, how does that even happen? I had no clue. And I kind of just learned it all since then. I still only know like about 10% of probably what I ought to, but it's just enough that I can get away with it. So it's been so awesome to learn all of that and just to learn a bit about podcasting in general and to be learning about the X-Files all the time. It's a learning experience. I mean, that's where it all came from, right? That's why we both wanted to do this, probably. Certainly why I wanted to. I just wanted to talk about the X-Files.
Yeah.
I just wanted to have an excuse to talk about the X-Files on a bi-weekly basis.
Yeah.
And that's what it's been.
And that's really what it comes down to. Like, I feel, what's so great too is like, I don't really feel as censored here as I do anywhere else, which is ironic because like this is probably where the most people are listening to me. But like, yeah, I don't feel like the need to be like, and it's also very hard on social media you have to be careful with your wording because then people are going to get, you know, upset if you say something that you don't intend and then they take it the wrong way. And on a podcast, you're just being yourself and you're just talking and people can tell when you're joking. And so it's a really, really nice format for me, especially to be able to talk, because I know a lot of people don't really understand my humor some of the time. I come from Family Guy. I've been on that show for 13 years. Nothing offends me. And so when people get offended, it just like, it's like a different language. I go like, what? huh? Like, that's just the way I am. I've become numb to it. So, yeah. So if I've ever offended you on Twitter, that's why. But, you know, here I don't have to worry about that because, you know, usually people can tell that I'm joking. Yeah. And we are, yeah. At the end of the day, we're talking about a TV show, which is what we're all here to do. So
absolutely. It is so much easier to communicate, I think, via a podcast than you can on the internet in any form, especially on Twitter, because it's not the same when you know, people don't know your tone and they don't know the context. And here we can make a fulsome argument. We're not limited to, you know, so many characters. Mm-hmm. And so we can approach a topic from, you know, the subtlety angle as well as, you know, the obvious stuff. We can approach it from, you know, all the different angles and try to sort of understand different points of view and things like that. And so it's a lot of fun. I just think at the end of the day, it's fun. You know, the podcast is it's work to a certain extent. Sometimes I say time for me to go do my unpaid job, but it's like the best unpaid job ever.
Yeah.
Because my paying job is really just a paying job for me. I'm an administrative assistant, which is, you know, I'm great. I'm grateful for the job. I enjoy it, but you know, it's not exactly a creative outlet. So this is like, you know, doing this podcast is like my passion. That's something that's fun for me. So, you know, it's about the X-Files, which obviously I adore. But, you know, over the year, I've become, you know, really excited just about podcasting as well. So I really just enjoy that aspect of it. I enjoy the editing and the mixing and all that kind of stuff, as well as the recording, obviously, is a blast. And, you know, the prep that we do and all of that, all the background stuff that we do, it's all fun and keeps my brain occupied, which is always a good thing because when my brain is not occupied, it tends to cause trouble for me. Mm-hmm. So this is good. It keeps me focused. My psychiatrist is super happy that I'm still doing the podcast. So it really works well for me. And I've had really a blast, and I mean, I had no clue what I was getting into. I think if I had thought about it longer than I did, I probably would have chickened out at some point. But because I was just kind of like in some kind of a weird like momentum vibe, it just all happened.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I didn't overthink it and that I took a bit of a chance, because I don't do new things very often because I'm afraid of what will happen if I do. But I'm really glad that I kind of took a chance on this and that things just worked out from the beginning. I mean, when we did our first recording, we had never even talked to each other on the phone, let alone met in person.
No, like we legit were like, okay, let's do this. Like it was seriously, it was seriously just literally, we just jumped in, not literally, sorry. We jumped in with both feet. Yeah.
And I mean, you were an experienced podcaster and I was not. So we had never podcasted together. I had no clue what I was doing really. But you know, it all kind of worked out.
Yeah. Yeah. You and I have natural chemistry, Jen.
We do. We're like Mulder and Scully that way, but even hotter.
Well, of course.
Duh. And it's just been, you know, learning it has been fun, but you know, the best part of course has been the hearing from the listeners and the fact that, you know, we recorded several, like maybe like six episodes, I want to say, before we actually released anything. Yeah. I think to a certain extent, from my point of view, it was like, I am not ready to release anything yet. I think we have to really release these things because then it becomes real and I'm scared of that.
Oh,
but when we did, it was amazing. It was like, so great. Something that, you know, that we were passionate about, that we were sort of putting time and effort and love into. The fact that there were like real life people listening to this was, I mean, I knew that was the goal, but somehow it still blows me away. That's one of the reasons why I love hearing what people are doing while they're listening to our podcast, because it still is a fucking delight to me that people are listening to our podcast. It still kind of like amazes me because it's something that I just love doing. And it's to me like this wonderful thing that this brings something to someone's life in some small way. It makes me just really profoundly happy.
Yeah, I think that like the addition of having the listener feedback has also added a new layer to the show that I've really been enjoying interacting with other people and having other viewpoints to discuss. Although, you know, you and I disagree plenty, but a lot of the time we're just like, oh, yeah, I agree with you. Like, all the time. Especially when we're talking about shipper-related things. So yeah, it is, I think that one of my favorite things that we didn't actually do before on the show was, you know, having listener feedback and having people write in and getting to you know, read your guys' tweets and interact with you guys online. That's probably, you know, one of my favorite things about doing this, too. It's very interactive that way. So
yeah, it's awesome. I mean, really, I think that when we were first talking about, like, what was this podcast going to look like, I think I might have even said, and this was kind of what my vision was, which is I want it to be like a podcast version of what happens on X-Files Twitter, because
yes,
I love the discussions that were going on there. And I was really, you know, involved in them and enjoying them immensely. And I'm like, can we somehow recapture that feel in a podcast, essentially? And it's almost like I like the fact that we have this, there is a lot of sort of interplay between the podcast and Twitter. And I love the way that that works. And I love the fact that folks want to respond to us on Twitter, because that's a great way to hear back from people. And I mean, I've said it before, but I value every single comment, every single like tremendously. It's just like so rewarding. It makes me so happy that this means something to people. And I don't care if it's one person listening or 100 people or 1,000, it makes me happy. So I really appreciate that. I really appreciate that people take the time to respond. It really like keeps me going in terms of, like, you know, it's time to do another episode of X-Files Diaries, but I know that people are going to listen to this and they're going to like respond and they're going to enjoy it. And it's going to make their commute more interesting, or cleaning the bathroom more interesting, or whatever they're doing while they're listening to it. Makes me happy. Makes me happy that I can sort of, you know, reach into people's homes and lives, and my voice is like carried in all these different places around the world. It just like makes me feel very excited. Yeah. It's just very thrilling to me.
It's pretty cool. I am, you know, I've done several podcasts already, so I kind of got over that fear a while ago, but I'm glad that I was here to kind of hold your hand through it, which was...
I desperately needed it. I was terrified at the beginning, and I still get a little bit nervous because, you know, nerves are good. They kind of pump you up a bit, I think, but I was so scared the first couple of recordings that we did, and so nervous about how were we actually going to make this work, and just basics like, we need a Twitter account and just like stuff like that all just seemed slightly overwhelming to me. So I was so lucky to have you along as a pro to kind of guide me along the way.
You know what's funny, I'm glad you feel that way. I've done several podcasts, but I'm the most comfortable doing this one because of all the subjects. This is the subject I'm the most comfortable with. Like, seriously, like, I feel like I do plenty of prep for this podcast, but I feel like a lot of the times I don't have to, because I it's a topic I know so well. So I'm always very comfortable. I always feel like we're going to have plenty to talk about, which is nice. A lot of the time that's kind of a fear on the podcast is, oh my God, what if we start talking and then there's nothing to talk about? And that never happens with us, which is great. That's probably one of my favorite things, is like you and I are going to endlessly be able to find things to talk about the X-Files. I mean, what do you think, I mean, in terms of like looking ahead, do you think that we are going to just continue forever? Is that your plan, Jen?
I feel like we could. I don't see why not, to a certain extent. I remember when we first started, I was kind of concerned about what topics will there be, and there's like a finite number of topics out there that we can talk about, and I was nervous that we would run out. And now I'm kind of like, yeah, we'll think of something. I'm not worried about it. Like,
we always come up with something.
From week to week, I'm not remotely concerned about will we think of something to talk about next week, because, you know, I know a lot of, you know, podcasts for TV shows tend to just sort of, you know, just do episodes in order and an analysis of all of those episodes. And that's a great style of podcast. But, you know, I love the fact that we do lots of different interesting things. Yeah. You know, whatever aspect of the show we want to talk about, we can talk about that. Yeah. And there's room in our format to talk about lots of different things in lots of different ways. And yeah, I feel like you, I was kind of like, how long will these recordings be? Can we fill up? can we fill up 40 minutes talking about the X-Files? Well, turns out we can fill up a lot more than
40 minutes.
Turns out
we have trouble doing less than 2 hours.
We can't stop once we start, as it turns out. And I was surprised by that, but in a delighted way. Like, oh, okay, we can do this. We can actually, like, this actually works. Yeah. And it turns out, yeah, and in terms of each topic, I feel like we could honestly record like 10 hours on any given topic. Even when we have like a 2 hour podcast, I still feel like, oh my God, are we done already? Like, has 2 hours gone by? Because I feel like we've just scratched the surface every time.
Yeah.
Because there's always more to say. And I love that. You know, I love to talk. Let's be honest. I love talking, and I love talking about things that I'm excited about, and I'm excited about the X-Files at all times. And it's just fun to talk about. And the fact that people want to listen to that and that it entertains them in any fashion is like a huge bonus. And I'm so glad. And it makes life a lot easier for my husband that I don't have to talk to him constantly about the X-Files.
I think we are filling that little void. I don't want to say void. For lots of people who don't want to talk their spouse's heads off about the way Mulder and Scully touched hands the other day.
Totally. It turns out not everyone is fascinated by that, but we sure as hell are.
We are. And that's what we're here for. Awesome. And that's what our listeners are here for, which is why we love you guys.
I do. I have so much love in my heart for our listeners, old and new. And it means a tremendous amount to me. And it's been like a really exciting year. Like I said, I've learned a ton. And it's done. You know, it's just a really cool thing. I always say the coolest thing about me, probably the only cool thing about me, is that I co-host a podcast. So I find a way of mentioning that in any conversation that I can manage to bring it up.
And it's anytime an extremely nerdy podcast. So
yeah, I try to gloss over with the topic sometimes, unless, you know, if we have an opportunity to get into it. I'm like, have you heard of the TV show called The X-Files? And then their response to that will indicate how much detail I give at that point.
Right, right. Also, their age.
Yeah, definitely. But I just love talking about, I have a podcast. I'm a podcaster. I love podcasting. So it's like, I'm not a super cool person, believe it or not. You know, I am a middle-aged administrative assistant and my life is pretty ordinary. So to be able to say that I'm a podcaster fills me with joy and pride. So I'm really happy with what we have been able to do with X-Files Diaries. And, you know, the kind of vision I had back like last spring when I was kind of dreaming of having a podcast, this has fulfilled that and more. And I'm grateful to you, Annie, because you have really made that happen for me and I appreciate it.
Well, I'm just as grateful for you, Jen, because I could not have done this by myself. I couldn't have just, I mean, I guess I could have. I could have just, you know, sat in front of a microphone and talked to myself, but I don't think anybody would want to listen to that. So I'm grateful for you for being there with me to be another shipper that I can geek out about and not have to feel like I have to restrain myself. That's always nice.
That's right. We let the shipper flag fly around here.
Yeah. Well, we definitely want to play for you guys some classics. So please stay tuned and listen. And, you know, if you hang out throughout the entire thing, maybe we might even play a couple outtakes. What do you think? What do you think,
Jeff? I think that, yeah, we don't have that many outtakes because, you know, our listeners know that our episodes are pretty freewheeling and I leave almost everything in. I always say that we're not trying to be NPR around here. We're not trying to be like professional radio style. This is like conversation. This is, you know, two people talking. And so most of the time I leave everything in, but occasionally, you know, we'll have something very not remotely connected to the podcast that we're just sort of discussing sort of quote unquote off mic, though technically we're on mic when we're talking about it. And whenever I'm going back and editing, I'm obviously listening to the whole thing. And sometimes I come across some of those things that clearly don't belong in the episode, but they make me laugh really hard. And so I'm always like, I'm saving these. I'm going to save a couple of these and we're going to find a use for them someday. So I'm glad that today we maybe have found a use for them.
Yeah. Well, we also just want to say thanks to all of you guys for listening and sticking with us. Even the new listeners, the ones who've been with us for a year, even the ones that have been with X-Files Diaries from the beginning, we appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening. And enjoy the rest of the show.
Thanks.
You know what? Let's just talk about it because we're talking about it. I think that this is not what, like, I don't think that Chris currently, obviously, thinks the relationship is platonic. Regardless of the bullshit he says in interviews, he does not think that. And by the way, don't read Chris Carter interviews. Just don't.
Don't. It's bad for your health. Just don't. No, it's bad for everything.
I think what happened was his vision for Mulder and Scully at the beginning of the show, because when you make a show, you have no idea where it's going to go or where it's going to head. I mean, none of them could have anticipated that this show would still be going 25 years later. You know what I mean? No. So, no. And I'm not going to say that he didn't even think that there was a potential for that, because that scene in the pilot where he's looking at her naked back, like, he knew what he was doing when he did that. And that was in the very first episode. Totally. So I don't believe him for a second when he says he believes that they should be a platonic couple. I think what happened was, it kind of got out of his control. And I think it was, I'm going to say, I think it was David and Jillian's fault, because I don't think that there was any way of him knowing that these two were going to have this insane sexual chemistry. I don't think that there was any way he was going to know. And then, and the fact that they gave us so little and we were just thirsty for it, it made people want it even more. And so it's like, maybe he even thought that what he was doing was like tampering it, but it was not at all.
No, I think that's exactly right. I think that I totally agree that he had one idea, and I think maybe it's certainly evident in the pilot that there was some sexiness that was at least at the pilot stage meant to be part of the show. But yeah, I agree that I think David and Jillian, as the actors they are, took those characters in a direction that was not necessarily intended. Not intended, I don't think. And I feel like it just became like a runaway carriage that you could not stop those horses once they got going. But I mean, I think Chris Carter tried from time to time. And I think you're right, probably. The less he gave us, the more we wanted. And it was like, I mean, certainly in the early days, you can imagine what it was like. Any tiny little thing became huge. I mean, it still is. It still is, because we still aren't given a whole heck of a lot. So, but especially in the early seasons.
Right.
There were shippers from the beginning. So we found little tiny things to get us very excited.
It's funny because, you know, you were just talking about the idea of the pilot, even the pilot differing from the rest of season one, because it's like, maybe I would be curious to ask Chris, is like, I wonder if he was pressured to put something like that in the pilot to get it picked up. And then once he had the show, he kind of reined it back a bit, because it definitely was reined back a bit for the rest of the season. Like, we didn't go anywhere close to where the pilot was in terms of that, like, that sexiness. We didn't go anywhere close to that for a while. So
I'm not sure we ever did.
You're right. I mean, as it stands, I'm like, that's like the most naked they've been together.
Yeah,
seriously.
It really is. It's definitely the most naked that Scully's ever been.
Yeah.
I mean, when I look at that pilot now, I'm not crazy about that scene. I know. Oh, good. in a good way, I hope.
Yeah.
When I look at that scene now, it feels a little exploitive to me. Like, it's a little bit like, hey, I mean, there's David Duchovny fully dressed, and there's Gillian Anderson with like no clothes on and like in her underwear. And it's like, we see a little more of that than is strictly necessary for the scene. I think it feels a tiny bit exploitive. It feels a little bit like, hey, sexy dame. But it's the last time we do that.
Right.
Which I'm thrilled about. I don't think we ever see that much Scully skin again for the whole rest of the series for the next 25 years. Thank goodness.
Well, I would argue that we do, just not with Mulder. Unfortunately.
True. Good point.
I think we see a bit in Milagro, and we see a bit in Weremonster. Those are the first two that come to my mind.
And they're both fantasy
sequences, so they don't count. But But I mean, here's the thing. I don't think that, like, Chris Carter at this current stage doesn't ship it, right? I think actually he does. I don't think he minds them having a little romance now again. I just think he was trying to do something different, and he doesn't want it to like overshadow everything, you know?
Yes.
It's such, I mean, I would argue it's the most complex male female relationship we've ever seen on television. And, you know, the romantic sexual aspect of it is almost secondary, you know?
Yes.
And I don't think that's I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, I think what makes me mad is when he makes the active decision to deprive them of romantic love and sex and all the other things that people want elsewhere, which is bad enough. Mm-hmm. And then pretending that they're not having it in each other was just cruel. And I get, and again, that's all from the interviews that I read with him that pissed me off. It's not from what I see on my screen. What I see on my screen is David and Jillian, you know, looking at each other and exploding my television. You know what I mean? That's what I see. And so
kaboom.
That's what I get.
Well, this is it. I think that most of the, let's call it Chris Carter rage that exists, especially among shippers, emanates from the interviews that he does.
I agree.
Not from what we actually see.
Oh, I agree.
And Chris Carter's written some very shippy episodes.
Oh, yeah.
And so if we just ignore the crap that he says as some, I don't know what kind of weird diversionary tactic he's got going on. I don't really care. But if we just ignore what he says, mm-hmm. and go with what's on the screen, we'll all be much happier.
Who would be your favorite, Mulder or Scully?
Oh, now it's not that hard for me, actually. I would say Scully every time for me. Scully is my gal. And I just happened to say just on Twitter recently that if Scully's not in the scene, my interest level goes down by 60%. Because I'm always watching her. She's not always the person doing the most in the scene. You know, Mulder is kind of the guy who's doing the most. He's got the most to do. He's in some ways the most interesting character. But Scully's always doing something interesting. And I just always want to know what she's doing. And a scene with just Scully is still fine with me. Even if Mulder's not there, I obviously prefer them together. But Scully, I just think she's so kick-ass and so awesome and so interesting. And Gillian Anderson just brings so much interest to that role in terms of she's tough, she's kick-ass, but she's also got a certain vulnerability and she's still really smart and she's tiny, but she's tough. So
yeah.
I'm Scully all the way.
All right. So it wasn't hard for you.
No. What about you?
This is really hard for me. It's like picking between my parents. I love my parents. It was hard for me. I mean, honestly, if season 11 didn't exist, I think it would be much easier for me to pick Scully. But but Mulder, I gotta go with Mulder. I do. I love Mulder so much. I think with all of his flaws, and he has many, I just love him. And season 11 more, or season 11 Mulder was just a gift. And I love that they actually said, hey, this character actually needs to grow. Let's do that. You know, I applaud them for doing that. And I applaud David for acknowledging that they did that. And I, even though, you know, I can admit he was an asshole a lot of the time. I don't like how he's always ditching Scully and he's doing. But I mean, you have to take all of that with the entire arc of his character and the growth. And I agree with you, too. Given my druthers, I would probably prefer to watch a scene with just Scully than just Mulder, because I feel like all the scenes that they got, like, hers were more interesting, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, I would prefer to watch a scene that's just, like the season 8 and 9. I'm really glad that Scully was the one who was left behind and not Mulder, because I do feel I do feel like that would have, that it would have not been as interesting if I was just watching Mulder. And because I think in the end, I think Scully might be the more complex, well-rounded character, but I think that because of season 11, and again, let's take out season 11 out of the equation. I may not have this answer, but given that growth, given that depth of his character that they were able to do, got to go with Mulder all the way. He actually, you know, Duchovny drew me to the show. So, I mean, I feel like he would come and actually find me and murder me if I said Scully. So, okay, my number 10, it's a little bit of a cheat. But I want to believe, I'm going to say, just domestic Mulder and Scully, okay? In the bed. I'm going to say in the bed, okay? Because domestic Mulder and Scully, like, give me life, Okay. Because mm-hmm. they just want to see them just yeah. being happy and normal. Like, you know, that's yeah. what people want to see. Like, I remember when I was in the theater watching, it was probably like a half an hour into the movie. We weren't really even sure what was going on. It's like at the beginning of it, she might have been coming to visit him. Like, we don't yes. know that she lives there. Like, and so you see her in bed and then you yeah. hear him and you're like, wait, what? And then you see him like come up over her. And yeah. I remember like the theater, like, just fucking exploded. Like, people, I don't even remember hearing like their next three lines, which were fantastic. And I had to go back and see the movie again because I couldn't hear what he was saying because people were cheering so loudly. Like, and it was just one of those things where I'm like, here we are. I think that movie was 2008. Yeah. And that's what people remember. Like, that's what people want to see. It's just, it. And again, I didn't need to see them having sex. I didn't need to see that. I just wanted to see them being together, like him being in bed, it's being all adorable husbandish with her. Like, yes. it was just, it was such a cute little moment. And then when he makes the dick joke, or she does, you know, he kind of sets her up and she yeah. she returns it, like she participates. Yeah. Like, what, she's come a long way, you know.
She really is.
I love it. I got a little something yeah. for that. Oh, just a little something, like, oh. I love it. It's like she's like him now, you know, like she's making yes. dumb dick jokes. Like, I love it. And then
it's so great.
And then the scratchy beard thing when he's trying to kiss her and she's like, no, I don't like your beard. And then, you know, not to mention the fact that he just like immediately gets up and starts to shave it, like like, I better do this if I want to get laid. You know, like, it's just, and again, all of this happening while they're discussing real life shit. Like, it's yes. it's happening during like a real life conversation that you would have in bed with your partner, you know, and yeah. like everything about this scene, I love it. Yeah. It's yeah. how
it's very real.
It's very them too. Yeah. yeah. And I mean, it wasn't like too cute. Like, we got like a teeny bit of cuteness, but it wasn't like yeah. over the top. It was just very them. It fit in the tone of where their relationship needs to be. And it was just, I mean, it was just such a gift to see that.
That was a gift. We had several gifts in yes. I Want to Believe, but that was probably the most beautiful of them all. And yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's such a rare thing, like you say, domestic Mulder and Scully. It's something we almost never see.
Yeah.
And so to see it, and it's just like such an ordinary moment that, you know, any of us might have with our partner.
Yeah.
But it's so like amazing to see it with Mulder and Scully because we never see it normally.
It's
and
the,
so
like
it
we
makes
were
it
saying,
very special.
Yeah. Like, the mundaneness of it is what makes it special. My number six is a very new one. RM9SBG93ZXJZ, the All hand right. holding at the end.
Nice.
In the diner. I gotta tell you guys, this moment murdered me. Okay. it slays me every time. Like, I feel yeah. it in my stomach because it's like, it's not just the fact that, like, It's a great ending to this episode and like the meaning of it, blah, 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 put your phones down. Let's make some human contact. Like, I get it. Like, they hit that in us in the face, but it's her look, everything about it, like her look, she kind of like looks at him. She kind of leans over and his hand is just there. It's like, he's waiting for her, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
everything about it is great. And how they kind of just like squeeze each other's hands is amazing. But what I love about the scene so much is the fact that here we are, 25 years later, and these damn fools touching hands can still like make me want to go to the emergency room. Like, I who can do that? Like, no one can do that.
Exactly.
No one
so
can do
true.
That. Like,
so true.
As many amazing handholds as we have gotten in this series,
yeah,
I had to pick this one because it's so recent, and yeah. and like you said, like you have a specific connection when you watch it. When I watch this and I'm just like, you know, they don't need to kiss here, because when they touch hands, it gets me in the feels, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's a great one.
So yeah, that one, number six.
And kudos to you for reading out the entire title of the episode as well.
Well, I normally just call it Followers, but I like the title. It's kind of cool.
It's cool. I tend to kind of call it RM9, but at one point I tried to memorize the full title just for fun, and I knew it for a while, but I've long forgotten it. But that is a sweet, sweet scene. And yeah, you're so right that like the fact that it matters so much. I mean, in many ways, I was annoyed that we weren't allowed to see Mulder and Scully more together in season 10 or 11. But this is why it's good that they weren't fully together, because then these little moments still mean that much.
Well, I think they spent a lot more time together in season 11 than they did in 10, for sure.
Oh, for sure. But they weren't like sort of romantically together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They hadn't sort of officially gotten back together.
It, in a way, it felt like you, like the show reset. You know, like you're watching it again from the jump, except they have this whole history now.
Exactly. So. And it kind of irked me at first that they were doing that. It's like, seriously, we're going to do this again. But then, you know, then we get moments like that and it's like, okay, I'm good with all of this now.
Yeah, it's allowed them to grow. And I mean, there's no way they could get away with doing a handhold if they were already a couple. Like, they couldn't.
No, exactly.
It wouldn't work. And like, that's what makes the X-Files so great. So,
Yeah. It works. And you're right. With the history, that's all. It just adds to it in a fresh way. That's amazing, because we agree on a lot of things, but we still have different takes on all of this.
Well, because like I said too, like there's so many of these. So it's like
there are some, and
especially if you were intentionally kind of trying to leave off some of the more obvious ones, or maybe they weren't even at the top of your list. I didn't have very many super obvious ones, but you know, I thought the couple of them might have made your list. You know, like the baseball.
I know. I tend to leave off a lot of the more popular ones.
Yeah,
because
you like the angsty stuff too. That's it.
Yeah. If they're not angsty enough for me, I think I was thinking about what is it about that baseball scene that puts me off one day? And I think it's
too damn happy.
They're too damn happy. And I can't take it. I can't take the happiness. It's like, I don't even know these people.
I love the happiness, and I'll take it wherever I can get it.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I mean, that seems more normal and more emotionally balanced than wanting everyone to be sad all the time, which apparently is what I'm going for.
It's
so
we have
our different sort of types of shipperness going on.
That's good, though. I like it. It's a little bit of an interesting dynamic here. We are down to our top 10. Can you believe it?
Holy crow, top 10. This is when the rubber meets the road.
Can I just say I love when you say holy crow? It's pretty amazing.
Dude, I don't even realize I say these odd things.
No, I love it. It's awesome. I only hear you say it. So whenever it's just amazing.
I've heard people say, oh, that was a funny thing in that podcast. And I'd be like, haha, that does sound funny. And then I didn't realize it was actually me that said it. So
yeah, it's great.
I say odd things. I'm from the Maritimes in Canada. I'm from Nova Scotia. We say strange things in Nova Scotia, I think.
It's great. I love it.
I'm sorry.
My number 3 is season 4, episode 13, Never Again. I have a feeling that my top 3 will never change. I'm gonna say this right now. So, I mean, anyone who's listening to this might know already what my top 3 is going to be. This is my very favorite Scully episode. Glenn Morgan, James Wong, of course. And Rob Bowman actually directed this, which I think is, he did a great job, even though they originally had tried to get Quentin Tarantino, which would have been really cool. I think it's perfect as it is. So, I mean, I can't even fault that. I think in terms of Scully episodes, I love all things, but as I've stated before, it doesn't really have an X-File. So in terms of like Scully-centric episodes, this is definitely my favorite. I love the tattoo thing. I love that like her getting, Ed Durst was hot, and I love her getting the tattoo. That was hot. This is a hot episode. Jodie Foster doing the voice of the tattoo is awesome. All the music they chose for this episode and even the score by Mark Snow is great. And you know what? It's funny. This is such a great non-shippy episode that it makes it kind of good. Like, the MSR is through the roof. I think, like, the way that they kind of advanced their relationship in this episode, it was the first time that they really did that. And this was season 4. So I was very impressed by that, and I love that about this episode.
Very interesting. Never Again is not one of my favorites. I rarely watch it, to be honest. I have a hard time watching Scully with another guy, I'll be honest. that's the only real reason I don't watch it very often. I think it is a good episode.
You should try it again. I promise you'll like it.
I'm going to have to give it another go. And I just need to kind of warm up to it a little bit more. I do really like the final scene in that with Mulder and Scully in the office. And they kind of come to like an impasse, essentially.
Yeah.
Which rarely happens. It ends on this very sort of uncertain note. We often get uncertain notes in the X-Files, but it's usually about like, is the monster really gone or not? In this case, it's more like, what's happening with Mulder and Scully's relationship? And is it going to, are they going to be okay? because it ends on this very sort of uncertain kind of, you know, tension between them.
Yeah.
And it's the only episode that I can think of that ends with no music.
Yeah, it's just silent. It's
completely silent at the end, and I'm not sure that there's another episode that has that.
You're right.
And it makes it very striking.
Mm-hmm.
This episode almost looks beautiful.
It looks fantastic.
Yeah, it does. It's a really well done episode, so I need to get over my petty jealousies and give it another go, because I know a lot of people love it.
Can I break my rule for 1 minute? Because I really want to ask you about this, because it's funny to me, because you are really into these episodes where there's all this angst and you are totally cool with Mulder and Scully being dead. But like, you can't see Scully with another dude. Like, that's just so funny to me.
I don't know how to explain myself.
Well, I agree with you. I'll let you finish. But to me, it's like she's doing this to piss him off. So in a way, it is kind of like he's still in her mind. Obviously, he's not going to leave her mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess maybe I just never really thought about it that way before. Because I think that I was just always, from the beginning, I just kind of took one look at it and said, nope, don't like this at all. And never thought about it in any other way. So if I think about it a little bit more from that perspective, I might be, but I'm still.
You know what's funny? And again, we're breaking our rules just because
Okay. We're doing good. We're in our top three. So we got to talk a little more about our top three.
Exactly. I think we can break the rules on the top three here. It's funny because with Scully, I'm fine with it. I hate that episode where Mulder makes out with the vampire. Maybe it's because of all the stuff I know about, like, why they did that and the fact that Scully was missing. And like, plus that episode just is terrible and I won't watch it because it's boring as hell. But like,
it's just a bad episode.
I don't like the idea that like Chris Carter is like, well, sure, Mulder can go off and have a fling. It's not like he can live like a monk, but that's not okay for Scully. I have a real problem with that. And I love the fact that it's four seasons in. You know what, Scully, get yours. I love it. I know it's up for debate whether, you know, they actually slept together. I'm in the camp of they did, but even if they didn't, like, good for Scully, go out and get some, you know. I don't have a problem with that, especially after what happened with Mulder and what Chris Carter said about it. It really pissed me off. So this was, to me, this was kind of like revenge sex, so I was fine with it.
Okay, I can see that. I mean, Mulder's a jerk in this episode, no question about it.
Oh, he is, yeah.
He very sort of typical guy stuff. He just doesn't get it.
Right.
I think I kind of have issues with jealousy in general, so it just makes me really uncomfortable for some reason as an emotion.
Well, you know what? I am actually going to give you an assignment to watch this episode, and then we'll have to discuss it at a later date.
All right, that sounds like a good assignment. I'm up for that. It sounds like something that would be good for me.
Yeah, and you feel free to assign me one. How's that? We'll make it fair.
I like that idea. All right, I'm gonna think about it. I'm gonna think about something, a good one to assign to you. Maybe it'll be another one from my list.
Yeah, I love that idea.
Yeah, that's a fun idea. We could do a whole other episode about that. I'm gonna give it another try.
Let's go to your number two, unless you have more to say about this.
I can't really explain myself, so I feel like one of these episodes I'm just gonna have to invite my psychiatrist to come, and he'll be like a special guest who'll finally explain what the hell is wrong with Jen.
I just love it. I think it's just very funny. Like, we're both very, very protective of this relationship. And
yes,
I am as much as you, but I still don't mind the fact that Scully got out and got some. I don't mind it.
Yeah, that's very, you're very modern. I think that's very sensible. Maybe because I'm a little older. I don't know. Maybe that's it. I can't really explain it.
Maybe.
I don't know. Am I a prude? Maybe I'm a prude. I'm not sure.
No, I mean, I get it, because I don't think I always liked this episode. I think when I was younger, I was not a fan of it. And now that I'm a bit older, I understand and I appreciate it a little bit more.
Well, I probably haven't watched it all the way through in about, I don't know, 15 years probably.
Oh,
so.
God. Yeah, you need to get on that, girl. Get on it.
Yeah. All right. Done. So how about that line where he says Agent Scully is already in love? I mean, that's pretty That's pretty on the nail kind of stuff. We don't get that very often on the X-Files.
No, and it even more frustrating is that it's never addressed again.
Of course it's not. It was too good to last.
I know. But again, I have to, I often remind people, hey, Chris Carter wrote that, guys.
Exactly.
And this is kind of the crux of this for me. And this is kind of why I love this episode so much, is because I feel like this episode is about these writers. You know, they have put these characters into existence, and they sort of take on a life of their own, which is kind of what's going on, obviously, with our Monster of the Week and our killer. But it has happened on this show as well.
Absolutely.
Six seasons in, this is Chris Carter. I think, I truly believe this. This is Chris Carter throwing his hands up and saying, I've lost control of these characters.
Yep.
Here you go. I have no control over this anymore.
My number six is from Unruhe from season four, Jerry Schnauz.
Oh, that almost made my list too.
Yeah, he just has a real creepiness about him. He's just another one of these just creepy X-Files characters. Like, as soon as you see him, you know he's creepy. And he's got, like, you know, he's got weird things going on with his eyes that are kind of freaky. But at the same time, you know, he seems a bit sort of pathetic because, you know, his dad died. So he's another one of these kind of, you know, monster with pathos type characters.
Yeah.
Where he obviously has had a lot of sort of hard things happen to him. And he thinks he's doing the right thing by sticking ice picks into people's eyes.
Right.
Like, dude, you should not do that.
All right. My number one most despised antagonist in the entire run of the show. That fucking bee.
Kudos.
And you know what?
For your choice.
That's really all that I have to say. That's my number one.
That fucking bee. The fact that all we have to say is that fucking bee, and all of our listeners are going to know exactly who we mean and what we mean and why we mean.
Yep.
Is exactly why he should be number one. And why am I calling the bee a he? I don't know.
Oh, you know, it's just Smoking Man in bee form.
Yes, he is. I can't argue with that number one. I think that's a solid number one, for especially for us shippers.
Why, thank you. I had to do it. I had to do a shippy one.
That's great. That is a very creative and really entirely defendable number one. So kudos to your number one. Are we on to my number six now?
We are. Let's hear your number six.
Let's roll it. Okay, so now we are heading into movie country. This one is from Fight the Future. The track known as Crater Hug, which is pretty descriptive of exactly what goes on in
pretty accurate
particular piece. A big crater appears, and Mulder and Scully hug at the edge of it. So this is like the second to last scene in the movie. It's a pretty recognizable piece, I think, for a lot of folks. And I wrote down, this is Mark Snow making full use of his movie-sized orchestra.
Exactly.
Because this is, like, a very grand piece. And, like, it has a very grand ending as well. And so much so that when I went to see the movie the first time, everyone thought the movie was over when that scene ended, because the music somehow seemed to say, the end!
Yeah.
Because it's so grand, and it has a great ending to it. It's perfect. I love it. It's gorgeous and sweeping. We hear that melody a couple other times on the actual series, outside of the movie during season five.
Yeah.
We hear, and of course, it's a much more sort of simplified arrangement, just the synth version. We hear it on The Red and the Black and The End as well.
Yeah.
I kind of just picture Mark Snow like composing that piece and thinking, this is too good to just use once.
Yeah.
I'm going to use this a couple of times in season five as well.
It's funny. And he probably didn't count on us huge nerds like watching it and going, oh, that's probably that shit from Fight the Future. Oh, you're recycling. Yeah. No, totally.
Oh, but luckily, I was thrilled to hear it because I'm like, oh, I love that piece. It's good. New version of it.
Yeah. You know, I have something to say about that because I don't mind him reusing it. But I mean, I like it in The Red and the Black because it's kind of fitting with, you know, he's looking for Scully. He doesn't know. Everybody's died. All these people were burnt up. So sad. I think it fits. But then in the end, it's used because like Diana got shot. And I am like, do not ruin my crater hug with Diana fucking Fowley. Seriously. I don't
fair
need
point.
That. Yeah. So
yeah, that's a fair point. I just kind of like try to like close my eyes and not pay attention to what's actually happening in that scene.
Yeah.
Because I usually do that when anything to do with Diana is happening anyway. And I just like lull myself off into happiness by listening to the music.
It makes me happy, though, when I'm watching that scene, knowing that she got shot. So, and then seeing
it's a happy scene.
And then it's a super happy scene. And then Scully's face is just like, oh, this bitch got shot. Who cares? I love it. So it's like every time I watch that show or that scene of that episode, I'm like, oh, okay, the music's okay because it's a happy scene. They're using it for happiness. It's okay.
They're using it for good.
Yes.
It's being used for a seed of goodness.
I just put out on Twitter the other day, I was just like, do you think Mimi Rogers has any idea how much hatred gets like spewed at her daily by random X-Files fans? Like,
I know, I'm sorry, Mimi Rogers. It's
she
not
has
your fault.
No idea. Like, Mimi Rogers, okay, we don't have anything against you.
We don't.
You actually did a really great job because we hate your character so much.
Well, I suppose that's a sign she did a good job, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
But I can't get past it. No.
Let's
I mean,
not ruin
like,
this,
I understand
though.
There's some characters you love to hate, but I just hate her. So that's a different story.
God. Yeah, that is a different story. That'll be a different episode.
It doesn't take much for me to start ranting about Diana Fowley, and apparently a very tangentially connected subject matter.
It is connected because we're talking about the music, and that's where
we are. That was it was slightly abused to be in the same scene as Diana Fowley, but she's unconscious, so
right.
It's okay.
Right. And let's just keep this with Fight the Future because that's the one that we're really talking about.
Yeah.
You say grand. That was actually the word I wrote. I think this is probably, arguably, the grandest bit that he's ever written.
I would agree with that.
Right. I mean, and I don't even necessarily mean in intensity because it's probably not the case, but just in scope. This is definitely one of those. I was even listening to this tonight and my husband goes, are you listening to X-Files? Like, he didn't even know. He was like, wait, is this still X-Files? Like, he was surprised. And I was like, I mean, I'm like, well, it's from the movie. And he goes, oh, okay. He's like, that makes sense. But it's true. It's definitely something you hear that's a little different because of its scope. And it's got a sweetness to it, but there's also, you know, a little bit of angst, which I know you love.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we know the truth is still out there and Scully didn't get to see it. But every time I hear this one, I just think of Mulder's adorable smile and how he closes his eyes. And I'm like, I just like die a little bit. Oh my God. So cute. Very fitting for the finale of a feature film. And they bring in the X-Files theme. It's great. It's a great one.
It's a huge scene in scope and you need a huge piece, I think, to really go with it. Sometimes when I listen to the piece by itself, I almost think it's too much, but when I see it in the movie, I'm like, nope, it's just right.
Yeah,
that. It's a really big scene, so it's a really big piece, and there's hugging. I mean, as the title implies.
Yeah.
I'm glad that the title recognized that the hug was an equally important part of that scene as the crater.
Mark Snow is totally a shipper. You need to read some of these liner notes. They're amazing. He even kind of fools himself into thinking things that are happening that are not happening, and I'm like, you sound like a shipper, Mark.
Exactly what we do.
Yeah, I'll have to find some of these and read them to you at some point. But I think that one more thing to say about this, I think that this scene is, you know, again, arguably, maybe with the exception of the end of My Struggle 2, which, you know, we don't discuss. although we might later, but is probably the biggest scene they've ever done for this show.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in terms of scope and scale and grandness, this is the one I would think would be like, even though I know it's like a CG ship, it's huge. I think about it being, you know, in a movie theater and how big of a deal that was in the story and how big of a scene it is. And so it's very fitting, I think, with that scene.
Yeah, it really suits it. And I love that scene. And I think part of the reason I love the scene is because I love the music.
Yep.
Very good.
My goodness, we are halfway through this list. We are down to my number five.
Fantastic.
Let's bring it. So another Fight the Future track. I love this so much. It's, to me, this bit right here, I mean, the actual cue is much longer and it goes into some sort of more intense stuff, but I just listened to the first couple minutes because this embodies the unresolved sexual tension in such a great way. Like, I can feel them not kiss, and it physically hurts me when I'm listening to this music. Like, it's the build up is so great and perfect, and it's also like weirdly unsettling. Whenever I watch this scene, and you know, I know this is your favorite scene of all time. Whenever I watch this scene, which we've seen a million times, it's like when you're watching Titanic and you're like, you know, I think we brought this up, but you're like, just steer the ship, just turn a little bit and everything will be fine. And it's like, but it also, when I'm saying it's unsettling, it's also kind of like when you talk about when you're watching the show, like season 6, season 7, and they're giving you so much MSR that you're not ready for it. Like, I feel like every time I watch this that I'm not ready for it. Even though I know they're not going to kiss, I'm like, and the music is such a big part of that because it's such a great, like these sort of ascending notes in kind of this minor key. It's not the kind of music you would hear in this kind of scene in any other movie. And I think it's one of those things that you don't really think about because you just kind of take it for granted because you're like, okay, well, this is the X-Files. This is this near kiss scene. This is kind of a big deal. But the way that it plays out is so unique to this show. And I think Mark Snow is just, he kills it. He kills this. I mean, that's really all I have to say about it. It's just such a great piece. And it's perfect for this moment.
It is really key to how that moment plays out, for sure. I don't think I realized how much until I saw one of the outtakes, which, of course, is, you know, there's no music in them.
Yeah.
And when you watch them sort of almost kissing with no music, it's just like a big nothing.
But
the music makes it so much bigger.
It really is.
And I mean, like, the music makes it so much more painful when the bee interrupts. Because you're just like really primed. That music makes it such a big deal and such a buildup.
You're bringing me back to that moment, and now I'm all depressed.
I know, right? I know. It's very, I wrote down, like you said, that's got that kind of like, it reaches like this sort of like crescendo of tension. And I wrote down, you'd think they were diffusing a bomb with that sense of suspense.
Yes, because they are. Like, this is the epitome of this show. Like, in terms of, like, actually diffusing a bomb, that's the equivalent for the X-Files is what is going on in this scene. So
exactly,
that's perfect. That's a perfect description.
I love it. And it's, like, the opposite in many ways of what actually happened for their actual first kiss, which we've discussed in Millennium, where the music was very sort of just sweet and sort of laid back and just lovely. And this, it's so overwrought and like, oh my God, are they gonna kiss? And it's a very different approach when they finally do kiss, which I think was part of the reason why I was so confused that they were actually kissing. I'm like, shouldn't there be like a bigger warning that this is happening or something? Because we had a big warning in Fight the Future that nothing came of it.
It was a huge warning. And you're just like, you have like at least 30 seconds of, Oh my God. Wait, what?
They're
Wait,
getting closer.
What? Yeah. You,
They're I mean, getting close. The music.
Yeah, God. And you're right. When you watch those outtakes without the music, it just, it's a nothing. Like, and so,
it's so again, nothing.
I think this is very, very important to be on my list because of that reason. I feel like this music makes that scene. And so
it really does.
Bravo and, to you, Mark.
I'm going to give a shout out to the very beginning as well, which is another variation on the X-Files theme because, you know, Mulder and Scully, important moment.
Yeah.
I think I'm really starting to figure this out, that they bring in the X-Files theme whenever there's like an important shipper moment going on.
They do. They definitely do. I actually, this is a good time to mention this because I didn't put it on my list because I really wanted to, but I couldn't find it anywhere. There's the moment in Plus One when she comes in and says, "Can you hold me?" and gets into the bed with him, and they play the X-Files theme, and it's very subtle. It's not subtle, it's right in your face, but it's just, it's sweet and very quick. And it, again, it's another one of those little moments where you're like, every time some sort of huge thing happens with them that's pushing them forward, that comes in. And it's a nice little thing to see play out throughout the series. So
it is. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Love it. Love it. Love it. So that's great. And I actually do like that whole piece, that whole stung kissing piece, even when it gets into kind of the more grim sort of stuff as sort of Scully is passing up, because I really love that part of the scene too. And I love the kind of, it goes from kind of like, it starts off kind of sweet and then it becomes like suspenseful and then it becomes kind of grim, and just the way that scene plays out. And I love every part of that scene, so I love every part of that music too.
Totally.
Is it time for my number four?
It is.
All right, number four. An episode that we discussed quite recently. This is also from This Is Not Happening. I didn't deliberately put all my pieces that were from the same episode together, but it just turned out that way, so that my two pieces were one after another in my list, and the two from This Is Not Happening were one after the other in my list. Now, I say this is from This Is Not Happening. This particular version of the piece is from This Is Not Happening. This plays, I do believe, when Scully and Skinner are standing outside the motel and looking up at the sky. Scully's talking about Mulder and the starlight. No, my goodness. It's like angst perfection.
Yeah.
So it's beautiful. I love it. This is an instrumental version of, I believe, what's called Scully's Serenade throughout season 8. And if you watch season 8, you know which one I'm talking about. It's this kind of vague vocalizations.
Oh, we all know.
You know what I'm talking about.
You know what? You know what, Jen? Let's actually. Yes. Okay, we heard the first one. Let's hear the second one. All right.
Okay. Let's hear it with the vague vocalizations.
All right. Let's hear it.
Tell they're the same melody, essentially. I actually did not realize they were the same melody until quite recently. I used to think I actually really like the vague vocalizations. I mean, a little goes a long way. I think it works really well in the first scene it's used, which is sort of the first scene after the opening credits of season 8, which is Scully sort of standing, looking at herself in her bathroom mirror. And the music works for that.
It's I can kind agree of like with a that.
it's like a window into her soul. Like, you, it really highlights her kind of anguish and her sort of pain and longing with Mulder missing. And so it works in that scene, and it continues through, like, she's walking through the halls of the FBI in slow motion. And it's an overwrought scene. It's an overwrought sort of moment. And so the music's pretty overwrought, and it works. They may go back to that well a few too many times, perhaps, in season 8. I don't mind. I like that piece with or without the vocalizations. I prefer it without. But I just love that piece. It is, like we were saying earlier, there isn't a lot in terms of themes in The X-Files. But season 8, Mark Snow went a little bit more towards the idea of a theme for Scully, at least. And so we hear this fairly often through season 8. And I love it. I love the idea of having a theme. And I love the way it works. I think it works well for Scully. Yeah, I know that mileage may vary on the vocalizations. I get the impression from the moaning sounds you're making that you're not a huge fan of the vocalizations.
Well, okay.
But tell me what you think.
Here's the thing. You love to just soak yourself up in the angst, okay? And I get that.
Yeah,
and I love angst too. I have an angst threshold, okay? And this is past it. Like, I love the Star Speak track, the first one we heard with the instrumental, beautiful. Love it.
Yeah.
When we get into sort of the wailing, I can't handle it. Because, okay, this is the problem, okay? It's like embarrassingly sad. Like, I kind of hate it. Like, do we really need to pile onto poor Scully? Like, she's sad. We get it, okay? Like, nothing against Mark Snow. Seriously, fucking Chris Carter probably said, hey, write something really sad. And Mark Snow was like, check, you know? But, like,
write something embarrassingly sad.
Yeah,
he said, okay, how about some wailing?
Too much. Like, it's too much. Like, we already all miss Mulder. Like, we get it. Okay, so I feel like this is completely, utterly over the top. And you're right. They overuse it. It's too much. They use it too much. And I kind of, this is my problem too. It's like, we're 8 seasons in and we're finally getting a season or a theme for Scully. And it's this. Seriously, I'm just like, do you really need to, like, you don't need to, like, beat the dead horse. Like, okay, Scully has had a shit time for 8 years. We don't need this really embarrassingly sad song to drive it home. And again, it just goes to kind of a lot of my problems with season 8 and season 9 in general. Like, I just, it's a lot of, like, Scully sad and wailing, and I'm like, it adds to it, and it adds to it in a way that I'm not, like, a fan. But I do want to give it credit, because when I was on Television Without Pity, which I loved, which was, like, my whole life when the season 8 was on, We all referred to it as the A music. And I need to give a shout out to Jessica, my good friend Jessica, who's amazing, who wrote all the recaps on TWAP. But she coined that, the A music. And we all knew exactly what she was talking about whenever she would say that, because we're like, God, here comes that music again. So, I mean, it did give us lots of laughs in an otherwise very depressing time. So I can shout it out for that. But yeah, I'm not a fan of the wailing. I do like Star Speak, the track you actually picked when Skinner and
that's a lovely track.
It's beautiful. And the actual melody is beautiful. And again, I do not blame Mark Snow, because it's a beautiful piece of music. I'm not, like, dogging on the lady. She's singing great. It sounds lovely. In the context of the show, it is just too sad. Like, it's too sad. Yeah. Like, I mean, when I'm watching the show, I think there's definitely an element of angst. There definitely is an element of sadness. We've talked about this before, and I like it. But this puts it over the top, and it kind of colors the entire season for me. It really does. Yeah, wow. in a weird way, because every time it comes back, I'm just like, oh my God, can Scully just function? Like, you know, anyway, I think I've bitched enough about it, but you get it.
It's so funny, because it colors the whole season for me too, but obviously that's a very different meaning for me, because
you love it.
It makes me like season 8 a lot better. The music is a big reason why I've come to like season 8. And when I watched that first scene with Scully and the wailing. It's like I was mesmerized.
It's the pinstripe shirt music. Like I hear it and I go, it's Scully on a bed clutching poor Mulder's shirt and crying into his pillow. And like, I don't need that shit. Like, come on, we get it.
I do need that shit. So I love it. I agree.
I love it once. I love it once. If they had done it, if they had done it in Within and it had stayed there, I would have been fine with that. But it just like, it keeps coming back and back and
I
back.
Know. Yeah. And I have, you're absolutely not the only person to critique it for that reason. But it turns out embarrassingly sad is exactly the right note for me. So every time it comes back, I'm like, oh, yes, we're sad again.
I am not surprised. I love it. I not it, but I love it. I love you, Jen. I love that you love it so much.
I love to bathe in sad.
Yeah, I mean, I will always stand by that this entire thing was just in reaction to him.
Yeah.
Not
for sure.
Not reaction to cancer, not reaction to anything. It's just so clear to me that it's reaction to Mulder.
I mean, she practically comes right out and says that.
Yeah. But I mean, at the end, clear. But she doesn't to him, because at the end she backtracks. It's like he says he sounds like a dick, but he's hit the nail on the head. He goes, all this because I didn't give you a desk. And because it's like, he's still talking about the desk, but he's not wrong, because she tells him, not everything is about you. This is my life, which is true. But but this was about him.
Yeah, and it really was.
And that's the only way she's going to say that and that's the only way she's going to get out of this alive. We've had quite a day, haven't we, Jen?
Oh, it's been a heck of a day in the X-Files fandom today.
It's been quite a week, we should say, but the fandom was murdered today.
We are all dead.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if there's going to be anyone around to listen to us, because
I don't know if there is.
Everyone has died. In case you don't know what we're talking about, because we have no idea when this episode's coming out. Hopefully, we'll release it very soon, but apparently, at the end of David's tour, he was in London and went to see Jillian in All About Eve, which was so cute and adorable. And everybody was just freaking out about it, how cute that was, that he went to go support her and see the play. And then, as if that wasn't enough, then Jillian decides to tweet like the cutest selfie ever. And as if that isn't enough, she captioned it that their mom and dad, she called them mom and dad, and now everyone is dead.
it's too much.
I love death and dying.
I wouldn't want to die of anything else.
No. So wait, I wanted to ask you, Jen, because I know we've both evolved quite a bit since our Duchovny episode, and there's the word that we did weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks ago. I've definitely kind of gone up on the Duchovny scale. I'm still in the camp of it's just for fun. I'm not like a crazy diehard, but I think they're adorable and I love them. But where are you in your evolution?
Good question. I think I'm pretty much where you are. I'm not. I don't expect them to get together romantically, and I'm not sure I even want them to, but I adore their friendship, and it is just kind of all in fun in terms of, you know, we all have a bit of a laugh about it, and it does make me happy.
It really does. I've had like a stupid grin on my face all day of this. Why? That's so sad.
I just like seeing them together. I like seeing them together and happy. That just makes me happier than it should, considering they're strangers to me, but I just like them together. They're always adorable together, and it's nice to see them together when they don't really have to be. They're not like at an event where they both have to like be on a stage together or something, but they're like, just they're hanging
there. He's there because he chose to be. Like, it's just it's so precious. Like, I mean, how many co-stars have this sort of relationship, like just this long and like still in touch and still friendly and just and like just looking at those smiles, and I like, my heart just went pitter patter.
They always look great together and happy together, and it somehow just enhances my love of the X-Files, knowing that David and Jillian have this sort of sweet friendship. And it makes me happy in my heart. Like you say, it's been like, what are we up to now? Like 26 years or something since they met. And the fact that they can still be so pleasant and supportive towards one another is, I think it's like a magical thing.
It really is.
It was like a surge of joy through the fandom, and it carried me on its wave for the rest of the day.
It was a perfect day to record because I was like, oh, we're going to be in really good mood today.
Totally.
But I wanted to ask you a question too, because I was like a little confused, and it was kind of made me think about when she says mom and dad, do you think she's referring to like Mulder and Scully as a mom and dad now that they've had their kid?
This is the question I think that many of us are asking. Okay. Exactly what is meant by mom and dad.
Because I know as fans, we all call them our mom and dad.
Exactly.
Like, there's no way that she knows that. Like there's no way she knows that.
I don't know, because literally that was the first thing that popped into my head. When she said mom and dad backstage, it was kind of like our mom and dad, because a lot of people do refer to them that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of the first, I don't know if that's what she intended to mean or if she meant like mom and dad as in like, that's our role on the X-Files now. I honestly have no clue what she meant by that.
Yeah, the second thing actually only occurred to me like 2 hours later. Like it really, like I was thinking about it and I'm like, holy shit, does she mean that like, oh, because they're a mom and dad now? And that's so precious. And I kind of loved that.
I love it either way.
I love it either way. Seriously, either way. I just think that the caption made the entire thing better.
It really did. We don't know exactly what it means, but we love it anyway because it's adorable. Whatever she meant, it's adorable.
I love that. Okay, and on top of that, we can get back to that if you want, but on top of that, this week already had like the cutest little Jillian Instagram Q&A, and which was already adorable. And then David fucking Duchovny has to go slay us all with his hotness when he decides to strip on stage at one of his concerts.
Seriously,
I seriously had the vapors. I know you don't like that expression, but like I had to like excuse myself from work. I don't even think I worked for a good 2 hours after that because I did not know what to do with myself. That man, wow.
I know. Thank God you kept me in the loop that day, because for some reason I wasn't Twittering that day, and
I kept several people in the loop. I had to talk to people. I'm like, Twitter wasn't even enough. Like 82 people are talking to me and I'm still texting people. Like, did you see David? Oh my God. It was insane.
Annie, you were out there doing God's work, spreading tweet around so that we would all see the video of David dancing around the stage with no shirt on. It was like, it brought joy into my life on that particular day as well. And really, we've been experiencing the joy from that ever since. And we'll continue to do so for the rest of our lives, probably.
That really is the gift that keeps on giving. I want to shout out to the people who actually like sent the photos, but I don't know them off the top of their head. It was not me. I was not at the concert. But I did enjoy spreading the love.
So thank you. I've seen a couple of photos and a couple of videos. And I mean, thank you to everyone who did that.
Yeah, you people are truly doing God's work.
Truly, and blessings to you because you were there to see it with your very own eyes.
Man.
So lucky you.
If I had any doubts about going to one of his shows, the doubts have been completely eliminated.
You do not know what he's going to take off when you're there.
I mean, who knows? I want to know who got that shirt and what they want for it.
Honestly, I mean, that shirt, it's the first thing I thought of. I'm like, well, where did it land? Oh, is all man. I could think.
If you caught that shirt, please let us know because we want to know.
We would either like to acquire it from you, or if we not, we'd love to talk to you about it. So we want to know what it's like to touch, to smell.
Yeah. Any details?
I want to know everything about the shirt.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, all the people who actually are tuning into this episode to listen to X-Files talk are probably like, oh my God, what was wrong with these ladies?
Everything is
wrong with us.
This is what's right with these ladies, Annie. This is what's right with us. Because if this is wrong, then I don't want to be right.
It's true. I want to talk about the motel room scene, which is probably, it from both POVs, probably the best scene in the episode, I would think.
It's very fun, yeah.
First of all, I just love how Mulder decides to just like make himself at home in her room. Like, why? Like, why is he doing that? It's not even just like, I'm just too lazy to go next door. Like, he fully just takes off his clothes. He takes off his pants. He's just going into her bathroom and like,
why is he showering in there?
Well, I don't think he showers. I think the sink goes on, because the pizza guy's the pizza guy's right there. I mean, he very very quickly takes off his pants. I have to say, the pants come off very quickly. Like, I don't even think she's out of the room, and his pants are off.
He addresses very quickly, and this is his version of events. So yeah, we can at least assume he wants us to think that he took all his clothes off when he arrived in
right.
Scully's room.
And I mean,
it's not in her version. I don't think in her version does he take his clothes off. I think it's only in his version, if I recall correctly.
No, I think he's wearing his tank top in her version. So, I mean, but it's not like it didn't happen. Like, we know it happened. Like, he stayed behind in her in her room. But I mean, it's the funny thing is that, again, it's like, to her, this is like, this is my room. Stay out. Like, I don't want you in here. And to him, he's like, well, fuck that noise. Like, you know, he doesn't. And, it's actually really intimate. Like, he's in her bed, like, eating the pizza, like, using her magic fingers. He's got, like, all his stuff. Like, he's got his stuff out, like, on the nightstand. Like, he's tucked in, man. Like, he's, like, not going anywhere.
He's making himself at home.
He's waiting for her. Like, right? Like, I'm not suggesting he's waiting for her for any sort of untoward reason, but he's just kind of like lonely. He's like, I'm not going to go back to my room. That's sad. I want to stay in Scully's room. Because
I'm hanging in Scully's room.
She'll be back eventually, you know? And then, you know, I just think it's so cute and funny.
And it is very cute. And if I recall correctly, and you'll know this better than I, in Scully's version, as she's leaving, it seems I think the only sort of admonishment she gives him is like, don't track mud all over my room. But I don't think she says anything along the lines of, get out. This is my room.
No, she does. She says, this one's my room, Mulder. Don't get mud everywhere. I think that's what she says.
Yeah. But I think she's okay with him staying as long as he doesn't get mud everywhere.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I took that.
No, you're totally right. But I mean, she does make it clear that, hey, this is my room. Like, she she lays it out for him.
It's definitely her room, which I find kind of an interesting point in the script, actually, that they wanted to establish this is in fact Scully's room. And yes, Mulder is hanging out in Scully's room.
Right.
And she's kind of like not surprised that he wants to. The only issue she has is that he's muddy.
Right.
So it kind of makes me think like maybe he does this quite a lot.
I think he does. Well, and I think he does. And I think she's just kind of resigned to it. She knows he prefers to just hang out in her room, which I think that's kind of, it seems like it's their thing, which I think is very cute.
It is.
Because even when she tells the pizza guy, she's like, that guy in there will pay for it. Like, it's not like, can you just tell him to leave too? Like, you're like, say, like, could you just take it next door? Like, you know, she's just so resigned to the fact that this is just the way it is. It's very cute.
Yeah, the pizza is gonna arrive. It's gonna still be eaten in my room, just not by me.
Exactly.
Mulder's gonna be in my room eating the pizza, and it's like, whatever. This is how it goes. And Mulder does not deny that's exactly what he did.
And then I love when he's sitting there, literally standing there in his underwear, okay, in her room, and he's like opening the pizza and he's like, ah, Scully. Like,
it's just so cute. I'm always like, is that like just because he's like so pleased at her choice of toppings?
I think in his mind he's like, you knew just what I wanted. I was ready for this pizza, and it's like you read my mind. It's like, in his mind, there's no way that she ordered this pizza for her. She did it for him. Like, that's why I think that's so funny.
It is a funny moment with the way he says that. So
especially coming off,
and it is funny. It's funny that she thinks to order pizza because that's what she sees in the stomach of the man that she's doing the autopsy on.
Yeah.
That is pretty funny. That is like, that's kind of peak Scully right there. Like, she's doing an autopsy, going through someone's stomach contents, and instead of being grossed out, she's like, pizza, that sounds pretty good, actually.
Yeah. Like, oh, God, I love it. Like, she's not grossed out at all. I love that, too, that coming right off the heels of the scene where she's saying, I do it all for you. And, like, that's from his perspective, by the way, that she's saying immediately after that, he's like, I'm gonna eat your pizza. I'm gonna take that from you too. Thank you, Scully. Like, it's so good that several episodes down the road we're gonna get the Fight the Future speech, because at this point she deserves it.
She really deserves it. She's earned that and then some.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny when I remember that line, I do it all for you, Mulder. I had sort of remembered that as being from her point of view, that she had been like, you know, I am a martyr for you. Why aren't you seeing this?
Yeah.
So I found it kind of interesting that that was the way Mulder saw it, which was kind of interesting and amusing in itself.
I think it's interesting, too. I mean, we look at it in the middle of a comedy episode, and so it's funny, but it's true, especially like I just mentioned the Fight the Future thing down the road, to acknowledge the fact that he's aware You know, he's aware that that's how she feels, whether she said that or not. It's coming from him, you know, so it's an interesting thing to note that that is from his POV. And it's something he's already cognizant of at this point in their partnership. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it's nice. It's a cool little moment. I also think it's funny, too. I was actually watching this tonight when my kids were in the room, which maybe wasn't the best idea. They happened to walk by when the bit with Mulder on the magic fingers, where he's like laying on the bed.
So
and she's like, and my daughter's like, "Why is the bed shaking like that, mommy?" And I'm like, I'm trying to think of like a PG way to explain this, because I mean, it's not like it's not PG, but I'm trying to think of a way to, I'm like, well, you know how, you know, sometimes it like it tickles and it feels good. And like, she's watching it and she's watching him laughing and she's laughing cause it's funny. And I mean, I think that's like the funniest, one of the funniest moments in the episode.
It's pretty funny.
But I was sitting here thinking, gosh, I thought the magic fingers thing was just so innocent, but I don't know how to explain it to a 5-year old. I really don't. I
don't
stumped.
Know. If, I don't know if anyone can explain magic fingers to anyone.
To anybody.
They're just a mystery. They're a mystery to us all.
I love the fact that they're in this motel with a bed that has magic fingers, and she just has all these quarters, and she's just she's like, "I'm down for the night. I'm good.
Yes.
I've got my magic fingers."
Wait.
Yes.
She could not. And she, and like when she says to Mulder, "I just put money in the magic fingers." She really wanted to enjoy that. And it is great when she's like trying to talk to Mulder about the autopsy and being quite serious.
Yeah.
But she's doing it while the magic fingers are going, so her boy magic fingery. That's pretty funny.
What a great idea. I think this
is,
it was just like, even little dumb things like that are just so funny. Like, she's your theory, and like, she's like on the bed and the whole thing's shaking. Oh my God. And then even you get
good.
That moment, that brief moment where they're like laying on the bed at the same time,
yeah,
which I'm sure.
I don't think I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody freaked out at that at the time, even though like she immediately gets up. It's adorable.
Yeah, but it happens. It's brief, but it happens, because we don't get many of those moments when they're on the same bed at the same time, even for a brief moment.
Right.
And she doesn't seem like, you know, freaked out by it
no.
or anything. It's just like, oh, screw it, I gotta go.
Well, neither of them do. I think that's what's so cute about it.
They looked pretty damn good together to me on the bed. So
yeah, well, we both
agree with
that.
For both.
I just think it's so cute when, even when it just comes down to like how close they are at this point. That like we were saying, like this, all of this is expected. Like just in the natural progression of this partnership, where they're at. None of this is strange or weird. This is just, this is how it is. Whether they like it or they don't like it or whatever, this is just their routine. And I think that's, I think that's what's so great about this sequence here.
Couple of honorable mentions.
All right.
Here's mine.
Oh, yeah, let's hear it.
Don't you sing something?
No, Mulder.
Now, if you sing something, I'll know you're awake.
Mulder, you don't want me to sing. I can't carry it down.
It doesn't matter to sing anything.
Jeremiah was a bullfrog. Was a good friend of mine. Never understood a single word he said. But I helped him drink his wine.
Okay, I think we all recognize this. That's Joy to the World, normally sung by Three Dog Night, but sung by Gillian Anderson in the episode Detour and the episode William, so seasons 5 and seasons 9. I mean, I think that a lot of fans love that scene. I know that we both do, certainly in Detour. It's just such a, like, you know, Mulder wants her to sing a song, and of all the songs to sing, like, it's just such a weird pick.
Yeah, I wonder why they picked this.
I mean, I think that the lyrics kind of work in the sense of, you know, about Jeremiah was a bullfrog, was a good friend of mine. I never understood a single word he said, so I always kind of picture, you know, Scully never quite understands what the heck Mulder's going on about.
That's funny.
But she loves him anyway. He's still her friend. But it is a very offbeat choice. Like, of all the songs you expect her to sing, the fact that she comes home with that one,
you know,
I love it.
This is, by the way, this is a great pick. And I didn't even think of this because, I mean, technically it's not the actual song. It's just her singing it. But it works. It counts. It's totally awesome that you picked it. And it obviously should be on everybody's list because this is perfect. But I think what my favorite thing about this is like when she's singing it, and I'm thinking more specifically of Detour. We'll talk about William in a second. But in Detour, when she sings it, she's so not into the idea of singing to him. That so she's singing with this terrible sort of flat intonation, like this bad voice. She's not into it at all. And so when she finally gets to the chorus, he like Mulder has to tell her, hey, chorus.
Yeah.
And chorus. then she's just like, joy to the world. Like, it's like there's no joy at all. Like, I just
it's
love her.
It's a joyless rendition.
Yes, it's a joyless one. And I really, 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 really wish they hadn't cut away and let us hear her sing the second verse about making love to him, because I would have liked to have heard her sing that part.
That would have been priceless.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so funny and it's sweet at the same time. And it's like, it's just a very what the fuck moment. And I love everything about it. So.
Well, and I love too, later when they use it in William, like obviously this is something David picked because he wrote that episode or he directed that episode to bring that back in that moment because that was obviously like a thing between them. This probably carried on because I don't imagine that she was just like, I'm gonna think of that random song I sang to you in the woods.
Yeah,
like, this is like a thing. Like, and I think that's so adorable that they've kind of created a backstory for this song. She would sing that to William, and now I have all these feels. But
It gives me super feels when she sings that. I mean, I'm not generally a season 9 fan, but somehow I wound up with 2 songs from William in my list.
Yeah,
and 1.5, I guess.
Well, William's
a
good episode. I think it's a good episode.
William's a solid episode.
Yeah.
And it's super sad, really, when she's singing this song to me because, you know, sad all the time. And because at that point in the episode, of course, because we've seen the teaser, we know what's coming, like you said earlier. And she's singing this song to William, and we all recognize it, those of us that are the big fans. I mean, it happens so rarely, really, on The X-Files that we get these callbacks to something from earlier seasons, something as direct and specific and accurate as this. And so to have this callback to something from 4 seasons earlier is magic. It's like pure magic. And, you know, we remember she sang it to Mulder, now she's singing it to William. And it's like, oh, it's all about her sort of like bond with Mulder and with William all at the same time. But then it's like, oh, but something's going to go awry. So that's kind of like laden with like sadness. And, you know, by the end, she's without both of them, you know.
Oh, God, stop.
Will.
We don't need
Stop. I'm so sorry.
We don't need that in our happy joy to the world place. No, I love that, too, that she changes the lyrics and sings it to William. Like, she says, William was a bullfrog, which, like, as a parent, I like how genuine that feels. And it seems to me like, and I, you know, and this is, again, my crazy, like, you know, David and Jillian conspiracy theorist crap. But, like, Jillian just seemed, like, more on during this episode, because maybe because David was back and David was directing, and I feel like it was almost like a thing they had together, like knowing each other, like their parents, and they kind of get it. And I like the idea that like that Jillian actually gets to behave like an actual mom in this episode, even for just a moment. Anytime they allow her to do that and it seems genuine, I really appreciate it. And I think David had a lot to do with that. Like, I feel like David being on set had a lot to do with that. I could be wrong, but that's just kind of my take on the fact, because I just love those little moments. It's like, it's so authentic. You know, I mean, that's what I do too. Like, when I'm trying to change my baby's diaper and I'm just singing to him and I'm just randomly making up lyrics and I'm putting his name into that. Like, it's super cute that they put in. It didn't seem like it was probably not scripted. I'd be curious to know if it was scripted or just kind of ad-libbed on the set. I think it was probably just ad-libbed. Such a cute idea. Such a great choice. Such a perfect choice. That needs to be on the list.
I totally agree that to me that is the most mom-like I think we see Scully being William in the whole series. And it's such a sweet moment. So, yeah, for all the reasons that you said. So, yay for that. Now, you have an honorable mention, too.
I do, too. All right, here it is. Okay, so this is actually probably a good one to end our episode on, because the reasons I picked it are probably not why you think. This is actually a really cool season 6 episode. I think it's a little forgotten. I think maybe because there's not a lot of Mulder and Scully together. Maybe they're kind of together at the end. But I like this. It's kind of Terms of Endearment. It's kind of like Rosemary's Baby episode. And this is Only Happy When It Rains by Garbage. This scene where Mulder is kind of just driving and he's kind of like racing. What's the guy's name? I didn't write it down.
Wayne.
Yeah. When he's kind of, I just like sexy season six Mulder doing anything, but like racing cars. Seriously. That's hot. But that's not why I picked it. It's not why I picked it. It's really great. Okay. But this song to me, this is 100% Chris Carter's song. Okay. I'm only happy when it rains. I'm only happy when it's complicated. And though I know you can't appreciate it, I'm only happy when it rains. You know I love it when the news is bad. Why it feels so good to feel so sad. I'm only happy when it rains. And then my favorite personal Chris Carter, pour your misery down. Pour your misery down on me. Okay. Could there be a more accurate song about Chris Carter? Okay, every time I hear this, I go, and he did not write this episode. I believe it was a different writer. But I always think, I think that they put this in there. And at this point in the series, he wasn't that evil. He didn't get really evil until later. But it's just awesome that it's there, because whenever I hear this, I go, this is his song. Chris Carter loves to torture us. He loves misery and pain and horrible suffering. And you know what? That this forever is the Chris Carter song. So that's why it's my honorable mention. It's not really memorable necessarily for the reason in the scene, but it's memorable as an X-Files song for that reason. And so that is why it is my honorable mention.
That's great. That is all great. And that's a great song. I love that song.
It's a really good song.
It's definitely the best part about that episode. It's to me not a great episode, but the two times that we hear that song, it's like the only time to me that the episode has any life to it whatsoever. And it's interesting what you say about that. It's like the Chris Carter theme, because it totally is.
Right.
And when I listen to it, I actually think of it as, this is also the angst lovers theme.
Yes.
For people like myself.
Yes.
That are only happy when it rains because we like all of the sad stories. And yeah, make it complicated. That's what we want.
And don't get me wrong, I like that stuff too. But like sometimes it's a little bit much, you know.
Yeah, so. No, I'm only happy when it rains. So that's the difference. I'm not happy when anyone's happy, only when they're raining. And the sunshine freaks me out.
Oh my God.
So I love it for that reason. And yeah, you're absolutely right. It's Chris Carter. Maybe that's why I love the X-Files, Chris Carter and I. We both love it when it rains, I guess.
Exactly. I mean, if you watch the show, you have to. So
you kind of have to. And it literally does rain for the whole first five seasons.
Yeah, I like the missing pieces and like the, you know, the holes that we have to fill in ourselves. And I mean, I think that's the reason that this show kind of birthed fanfic, because they left so many holes on purpose. It's the X-Files. Mm-hmm. That's the nature of the show. I get that.
Yeah.
But,
some holes are fun. Not to be too raunchy about it.
Yeah. I was like, wait, we're taking this the wrong direction. It's not that kind of fanfic.
It just got a little blue. But it's, you know, plot holes are fine to a certain extent. It's fun to come up with your own theories to fill them in.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if X-File podcasts would exist if everything was always explained clearly.
Right. But, well, I don't even think we would like the show as much, to be honest. And I think that's,
I don't think we would.
Hard
we wouldn't
for
have
people
as much to talk about.
Yeah, that's kind of hard for people to grasp. And I'm not saying that they have hit a home run every time. They certainly haven't. There's lots of times when I feel like it's just straight up confusing, bordering on character assassinating.
Yeah.
You know,
that's when it becomes a problem.
That's when it becomes a problem.
It's fine
when
you know there's like deliberate ambiguity. I'm good with that. Or even accidental ambiguity can occasionally be kind of fun and interesting. But it's when the plot hole is, why did so and so act in such and such a way? It doesn't make sense to them at that moment. That is harder to forgive.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that completely. And you know, bringing it back to the William thing and like all the information we didn't get and all the stuff we didn't get to see, it just makes me think too that like this is, and maybe Chris Carter intended this. This is going to be remembered probably forever as the biggest long con ever played on a television audience. I mean, right?
Honestly, right? I mean, how many years?
And you know, the sad thing is, it only gets stronger on rewatch. This concept that this was his plan all along. Like, I always expect with shows, and I mean, this happens with a lot of shows that I watch, things to kind of start to fall apart on the rewatch.
Right.
I find the opposite happens with the X-Files. And I know a lot of people might give me shit about that. But I mean, I have watched this series a dozen times, you know, and like every single time I will see something new that I'll be like, holy shit, they said that in season three. That carried on all the way through to the end. I mean, this was in the revival. Like, and I see that all the time. And I mean, even with the William thing, it's like, yeah. I don't want to believe that this is true. But when I go back and I watch all the groundwork that was laid so carefully and all the dialogue that I didn't pay attention to in season eight and season nine because it was so fucking boring, it's there. It's all there. And it kind of makes me mad because I want to point out that, oh, this is wrong because you said this. And I mean, the only thing people can point to is behind the scene interviews that people gave, which is always what people say. And I go, look, you can't take stock anything Chris Carter says behind the scenes because he's just full of nonsense, as we've said multiple times.
He is a man stuffed with nonsense.
You have to take what you see on your screen. You know,
that's all we have. That's all we really have to go on at the end of the day.
Right.
Otherwise, we'll just drive ourselves crazy.
Absolutely.
More so than we already are.
My number five, and I think that we will be, everyone, when I say we, I mean everyone, will be salty about this until the end of time, is that we got no kiss in season 11. And I would say season 11, I would say the revival, but particularly season 11. And I'm not even saying in Nothing Less Forever. We already talked about that ad nauseum. I don't think a kiss was appropriate there. I'm annoyed that they promoted it like that, but I don't think seriously, I would have been happy in plus one if she turns over and says, we'll think of something. They lean in, they kiss, we pan away.
Seriously.
How hard would that have been? Would that have been? And so that could have been the place. That could have been the place where they did it.
Yep.
There were a million opportunities for them to do it. Still salty about that. No kiss in season 11, number five.
100% agreement, so much so that that's actually my number four.
Oh, perfect.
So, yeah, totally agree with you. I look at this and it could easily be my number one. I'm that angry about it still because it would be different if it had been established on the X-Files that we never get to see Mulder and Scully kiss. We have established that we get to see them kiss occasionally.
Yeah.
We had like three in the original series. We had an awesome one at the end of I Want to Believe.
Yeah.
So we do get to see Mulder and Scully kiss occasionally. It's allowed.
Mm-hmm.
But then suddenly the revival comes around. Nope, not allowed anymore. Even in, like you say, in situations where a kiss would be totally appropriate and expected.
Yes.
I mean, we're allowed to know that they had sex. But why are you not giving us a kiss? Come on. We know they can do it and they can do it well.
Yeah.
So you're just depriving us at this point. And
that just seems particularly brutal and cruel to me.
It really does.
It's one of those scenarios where I can legitimately say that I think Chris Carter hates us. So
it kind of feels like that because that's like you're almost going out of your way to keep it out of the episode.
Right.
It's so naturally would have gone in that episode and in many episodes. That to leave it out is like you're making an effort to not have it in there now. And you're just, why are you doing that? I don't know. Is there an argument to be made that Chris Carter hates shippers? Well, when you see this kind of thing, it kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So it's just like, it makes no sense. It doesn't make sense with the series as a whole. Like I say, it doesn't make sense with their characters. Why? Why can't we have nice things?
Mm-hmm.
It just makes no sense to me. And all we want is a kiss. You know, a sex scene would have been great, but I mean, a kiss would have gone a long way with me. And I am way saltier about that than I am about not getting a sex scene, actually. So a kiss would have been really nice. How about just a quick peck? I'll take anything. Mm. A quick peck on the way out the door in My Struggle 4, I would have been fine with that.
That was going to say that. It would have been a great place. Just come back alive. Run to her. Run to her, Mulder. Embrace her. Give her a kiss. No, we don't get that shit. He just leaves. No.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, shoulder shrug. No.
No.
Jeez, come on.
That's frustrating because it's like, that's not how people behave. Like,
It's not how people behave. I kiss my husband every morning when I leave the house. It's just kind of natural. When your man is heading off on like a life or death journey, maybe a quick peck might be in order. I don't know.
Yeah, it's frustrating. That's frustrating. I mean, you don't even need to show him leaving. Like, just cut. Like, so we can just imagine that they kissed there. But no, it's like they make... they make an active effort for him to just turn around and leave. It's frustrating. Yeah. It's annoying.
We know for sure that there was no kiss.
Yeah.
And like as season 11 went on, I started to get more and more irked that we hadn't seen a kiss yet. Mm-hmm. But I was certain, I had faith that we would get one because we always had before. We got one at the end of season 9. And having already gotten a couple during the original series.
Season 8. I want to believe. Like, legit, every sort of ending ended with a kiss. Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, ended with a kiss. And so certain we were going to get one in My Struggle 4. And because I was already, like, after Plus One, I'm like, okay, come on now. What's going on here? But I'm like, okay, they're saving it for the end. That's fine. But they weren't, as it turns out. So...
I don't think it would have been appropriate at the very end of Bicycle 4. I will say that. But again, there were a million opportunities. Like end of Lost Art of Forehead Sweat.
Yes.
That would have been a great moment for them to just kind of lean in and have a kiss. Like,
they're
come on.
Practically kissing already.
Yes.
Like their heads are positioned in kissing position.
Yeah.
They were kissy eyes.
They were having eye sex. So I mean we can be okay with the eye sex, but still.
Yeah, I guess we have to be. But yeah, that would have been a very easy place to put it in. And like how over the moon would I have been if they had done that? I was already really happy with that ending.
Yeah.
But throw a little kiss, even just a quick little kiss.
Yeah, just something. Come on.
It's one of those things. It doesn't make logical sense to not have it in. So you just have to shrug your shoulders and say, why? Why is it like this? But, and yeah, I'll never stop being mad about that.
Yeah, I agree with you.
For the rest of my life, probably, because it just seems so dumb. And it's something that would have meant so much to us shippers.
Yeah.
And to not have it is like, no, dude, why are you being like this? So, mm-hmm. yeah, that's actually my number four. So I've discussed my number four. So what's yours?
Okay. Oh, God. I'm so ragey. I'm so glad I have my Stella here, my beer, because I need to be drinking.
I should have had some kind of something to mellow me out. You know, pot is legal up here in Canada. So maybe a little something, something before we'd started the podcast might have calmed me down a bit. Yeah. But hey, I'm just living with the rage right now. I'm alive. It makes me feel alive. Yeah, I think at that point, again, I don't know if it was official when they did the episode, when they filmed the episode, that it was going to be back for season 9, but I think everyone assumed it would be at that point.
Yeah.
And I think by the time it aired, we knew exactly, as you said, that Jillian was coming back, and that I think we were pretty sure that David wasn't at that point. And so who knew what was going to happen? But I mean, as an episode, as a final episode, it's not a particularly strong one, in my opinion, just because it doesn't have the sense of scale that Requiem has.
Yeah.
That sense of like, let's look back on the show. It clearly wasn't written that way. Fair enough. But as an ending to Mulder and Scully's story, like you say, you can't get a sweeter ending, really. And I've always loved this idea that the real truth, with a capital T, is Mulder and Scully and their love and their relationship. That's the truth.
Yeah.
And which I must articulate it like that.
Which I must say, not to interrupt, but I do need to say this because a lot of people say that was somehow stepped on with what comes later. And I don't necessarily think that's the case because the intent is still there and always has been and always will be for what that scene meant for the two of them at that time.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing will ever change how I feel about that episode and that scene. Nothing will ever change my opinion. I don't care what comes after that.
Mm-hmm.
It will always be a sweet scene. And like the beautiful way that like the camera pulls back and we just like, here's Mulder and Scully. We're leaving them now with their little baby. Everything is going to be perfect for them. Let's just leave it at that.
Right.
And I mean, that's a beautiful ending. You can't top that in terms of like purely happy ending, which is of course why it's in my lower half in terms of how I feel about series endings.
Right.
Because it was just, honestly, I remember watching at the time just being weirded out by it. It was just like, it was happy, but it kind of like, it was like out of nowhere happy for me because,
like too much.
I don't know. It was too much maybe. And like season 8 had been a weird season and such an angsty season. And then to have this kind of like, and Mulder and Scully weren't together really hardly at all in the episode. Well, I don't think they are until that very final scene. And then all of a sudden they're super happy. And it was like, I didn't know what to do with it. It was just weird to me. But, you know, looking back on it, I like it a lot. It's very sweet. It's a little too sweet for me in a way.
Mm-hmm.
There's not enough. Because for me, the X-Files is never just sweet. There's always like a little bit of, angst that's got to be underpinning it. And there's not enough angst for my liking. But I totally also agree with you that it was such a great ending in terms of a jumping off point for Doggett and Reyes. Because, yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, they're going to do great things in season 9. And, of course, it didn't turn out that way.
Yeah,
I still feel like they could have.
It was so unfair to them.
Unfair.
It was so unfair to them that to keep Julian on that show.
I mean,
we've talked about this before, but I'm just like, the entire time you're just sitting there depressed that Scully is all by herself and Mulder is nowhere to be found. It was a reason, but it was no good reason in the end. And it was one of those things that was just like, if they were not there at all, like, I would have just been like happy enjoying my X-Files show and been like, Mulder and Scully are off, you know, changing diapers and shit, and they're not being traumatized anymore. And I don't have to worry about them. And who knows, maybe they would pop in from time to time and like help out on a case. I don't know. But I mean,
that would have been perfect.
But we can't have nice things.
There was a rule at TWAP, which I wish I had ported over to my own website, which, let me just say, parenthetically, the commenters on my own website are fantastic, but there's this rule on TWAP that you could not begin, I just did it, that you could not begin a comment with the word
Oh my God, Jessica, I literally had to tell people this on Twitter the other day, and I'm like, the second you say you sound condescending. You cannot do that. Yes.
Once you see this, you can't unsee it. No one ever has something substantial to say that begins with because it's going to be like you're an idiot.
That's the way you hear it, no matter what they have to say after it. And agreed, and that's interesting that you brought that up.
Delete the and whatever you say is going to sound less assholey.
Let's talk about the conversation. The conversation. I'm going to let you start. I want to hear what you have to say about the conversation that they have after she says the iconic line, "Can you hold me?" which I heard the collective screaming of shippers across the country and all of the countries.
Hell yeah.
This following conversation, what did you think about it?
The first time I watched it, I didn't care for it. I'll be honest about that. So I totally get it when people say they don't like it. Because that was my first impression too. I wasn't listening super carefully. I'll admit that. I was just wondering the whole time where it was going, and so I was just sort of picking up on the surface meaning, I think, of what they were saying. And so, you know, when they're talking about things like, you know, Scully saying maybe you'll meet someone and someone younger and you can have kids, and Mulder's like, maybe you will, you could do that. And she's, I don't know who I'd have them with. And I'm like, what is even happening here right now? What are you two doing? I don't approve of this.
Yeah.
And so it kind of distressed me a little bit that they seem to be kind of like fobbing each other off, like, you know, that each other wasn't even an option. And I'm, guys, what's happening here? And I was quite baffled by it. But then it just took a little while to sink in. Like you say, you just have to kind of watch it a few times. Mm-hmm. And as long as once I calmed down and watched it the next day, several times like yourself, and it once I just turned my perspective around a little bit and realized, oh, they're not saying what they mean. We're not supposed to necessarily take this as a factual gospel truth of how they're actually thinking. Their words do not reflect their thoughts necessarily, and which is very typical for Mulder and Scully.
Yes.
It's a very, like you say, it really says a lot about their characterization. And if you don't really think about it in a certain way, then you might be thrown by it and think these people don't seem to think much of each other. But in reality, it kind of dawned on me, this is actually quite a complex conversation, and really quite sort of written in a very complex way. And what's really happening is that they're just throwing this kind of like stuff back and forth at each other, almost like trying to sort of bait each other in a way, I feel like.
Yeah, totally.
Kind of trying to like, they're talking around the issue. They're almost trying to provoke each other into saying something real, which is a dangerous game and not a successful one in this case. And so it winds up being all a bit weird. But neither of them seem to mind the weirdness. I mean, me as a viewer, I'm watching it saying, guys, what up? But they obviously understand each other's code better than I did at my first viewing, because they're both perfectly happy with how the conversation ends, even though it doesn't seem to have any kind of a genuine sort of conclusion to it, other than shoulder shrug, hope for the best. But, you know, they're Mulder and Scully. They get it about each other, and they know it's all about what's not being said.
Right.
And once I kind of understood that, and hey, they're happy with how it ended, clearly. So I'm going to be happy with it, too. So it's actually a really interesting insight into their conversation style, their communication style, and their characters, and how damn frustrating it can be sometimes for each other, I got to think, and certainly for us as the viewer, but very authentic and actually really quite well written.
Yeah, I actually agree with that that assessment, too. Like, what I think the main thing that I took away from this is Scully, like, making this point to press, like, I'm not going to let you get away with it. Like, I'm not going to let you get away with making a joke. Like, she literally says, that's not what I mean, twice.
Yeah.
Like,
which
is not something that happens when they have conversations. Like, first of all, we rarely get conversations of them having about personal anything. Like, that rarely happens.
Yeah.
And in season 11 alone, we have three-minute conversations of them talking about their relationship, which we have never gotten. Like, they don't. That's just not a thing they do. And I'm not suggesting that these are two people that have had this relationship and that they never talk about their relationship, but there's definitely communication issues. I mean, they've talked about this since for a long time, and we know this. I mean, anyone who knows Mulder and Scully should know this, that they don't necessarily talk about the things that they need to talk about. And I love the idea that she has to press him and that she does. It almost makes the whole feeling old conversation, it gives it a little bit more weight, because it's like she's suddenly feeling this push to be like, you know, we need to talk about this. Like, I what's going on? You need to give me some sort of assurance that I'm not going to be left alone, you know? And I think they do that in their own way. Like, kind of like what you said. I mean, a lot of the people, and, you know, this is fair critique, a lot of people will say, why is Mulder asking her if she can have kids? He knows she can't have kids. And I'm like, of course he knows she can't have kids. Like, why is, like, he's, you know, he's Mulder. He's going to say things that are, like, going to make her feel better. You know what I mean? Like, maybe there's hope. You know what I mean? Like, that's Mulder. So it's like, it never bothered me that he said that. She's kind of being rational, like she always does. That's not going to happen. And she's, I don't have anyone to have one with, even if I could. You know, like, she's fishing, like you said. Like,
yes.
It's so... It's kind of heartbreaking in a way, but it's so it's real, because sometimes when people don't know how to talk, this is how they talk. And I just love that about this scene. It doesn't play out the way you would picture it to play out. And I mean, I think that's the problem with a lot of people in general, sometimes with Mulder and Scully, is that these things don't play out the way that they do in other movies and other TV shows. It's just not the way that they do things. And I actually find that refreshing. I like it.
All very, very true. Like, yeah, just very real and, like, you know, like, kind of dysfunctional. And that's what Mulder and Scully are. I mean, they wouldn't have had the relationship they had if they were two functional people in a relationship. And so, it's season 11. They're still kind of dysfunctional, but, you know, they make it work for them as best they can. And I'm going to draw a correlation between this conversation and the one that they have in Nothing Lasts Forever, which I like to bring up at every possible opportunity. Final scene where they're talking about their relationship. And there's a lot of similarities there. And the one in Nothing Lasts Forever goes a bit farther in terms of resolving some things. I think that we even hear, like, the exact same lines where Scully says things like, that's not what I mean.
Yeah.
And in that case,
Mulder presses
a bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And say, what do you mean? Like, spell it out for me. We've got to get past this obstacle. There's a really nice arc with those two episodes of, you know, they're starting to talk about it here, but not having a lot of success with it. But then by the time they get to the second last episode of the season, they're revisiting that kind of conversation and having it in a much more healthy, open, successful way. And it works really well. And I love that.
Our babies are growing up.
They really are.
Yeah. I love the scene. It seems like, and you know what else is interesting, which kind of, you know, sometimes one single line can kind of alter my entire perspective. Like the fact that he says to her, "Do you want to have more kids?" It tells me that they've never talked about this. That tells me that they don't talk about this, which to me makes perfect sense. You have this sort of horrible thing that happened that you're not, what are you going to, you're not going to talk about it. Like, you're not going to talk about that. It's just going to kind of grow and grow and get worse and worse. And that's a thing that happens. That's a thing that happens when tragedy happens to people. And I mean, we know that they have no shortage of tragedy that's happened in their lives. The William thing is at the top of that list. So when I hear Mulder asking her, well, you want to have more kids? Like, look, it's 10 years too late to be talking about this, but let's talk about it now. You know what I mean? Like, that's heartbreaking. Yeah, like, but it tells me something about their relationship, like that their relationship fell apart for a reason. And I can see it in this dialogue. I think a lot of time people just get upset because they're not seeing what they want to see. But I feel like I feel like people don't give Chris Carter enough credit for knowing these characters. I think he knows these characters more than people think he does. And he made them after all. So
He did. And yeah, I totally agree that if I was writing a fanfic, I probably wouldn't write it like this.
No.
Because, you know, I wouldn't want it to go like this, but it is what it is. It's Mulder and Scully. This is what they're like.
Yeah.
And knowing how things ended through the season and how things went through the season, I can take it a lot better now because I know things continue to sort of improve between them.
Yeah.
I think at the time I felt like it was a setback, but I kind of started to grasp that that wasn't a setback. It was, like you say, they're bringing up issues that they should have been bringing up years ago, but, you know, better late than never. I'm glad that at least they're trying now. It took them to this point to really be in a place where they could even start to talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
So the fact that they're even bringing it up, trying to talk about it, that's a huge thing for them. It's not a super successful conversation, but it's their first go at it.
Yeah.
And so better, it's about damn time. So,
and, you know,
I'm glad that they did.
It ended in sex, so it can't be too terrible.
Yeah, it obviously didn't end too badly. They were pretty happy with how it ended, that's for sure.
You know what I wanted to point out? No, go ahead.
Yeah,
what?
Go ahead.
You go.
I was just going to say my favorite line in that conversation is it's a little bit it's kind of stands out from the rest of the conversation to me, but I just love it in and of itself. When Scully says, "Sometimes I think the world is going to hell and we're the only two people who can save it." Because for me, that is the X-Files. That is exactly what the X-Files has always been about for me, is the world is going to hell and Mulder and Scully are the only two people that can save it, and they're going to save it together. And I love that line, and I know that they used that line in a promo at one point, or sort of before the season started, I think, and my head was practically exploding because not only was she saying, like, my very favorite thing about the X-Files, they're in fucking bed together.
Yeah.
So, like, what is going to happen in that episode? I was like, it's everything I love about the X-Files happening all at once. So I just love that moment.
Well, and I think a lot of people get mad at that too, because it's like suddenly they think they're not talking about their relationship anymore because now we're talking about Trump, which they are. But they are talking about their relationship because it's, again, she's trying to tell him, it's you and me, you know, like, this is where we're at. Like, whatever's going on around us, you and I are the only two people. It's her telling him that without saying it like they do.
It's the two people. That's the key part. It's like them together, not either of them, but both of them together. And that's the magic of the X-Files,
it's
Mulder and Scully together, and the world definitely needs to be saved on a regular basis on the X-Files, and they're the people to do it.
Yep. And we were asked this on Twitter, folks, so we have to talk about the moment where Mulder goes into the bathroom.
Yes, and let's talk about it.
And rinses his mouth out. Okay, we all know where we're going. The consensus that I see is that there's only one reason for Mulder to be going into the bathroom and rinsing his mouth out. And I have to tell you a story about this because over dinner tonight, I had a conversation with my husband about this. We were talking, and he's very used to my ridiculous X-Files debates, and this probably is at the top of the list in one of those debates, but I was just kind of explaining to him the scene, and I was like, as a dude, you know, what do you think? We literally talked about this. Jen, I'm not lying. We talked about this for probably about 10 minutes, He was asking me about all of the things that were leading up to the scene, what was happening and all this stuff. He's like, okay, well, how long had they been sleeping? What was going on? We had this whole conversation. And then I was trying to tell him all this. And seriously, at the end of this, he goes, why are we even talking about this? Of course he ate her out. That's exactly what he said. And I was like, thank you. Thank you. And he's like, done.
All right. It's official.
Yes.
It's official.
I was like, yeah. And then after a while I was like, why are we debating this? And I'm like, you don't understand. The reason that people are talking about this is because we are so thirsty that this is such a big deal that they put this in the episode. The idea that we can roll this into their repertoire, like the handcuffs, is just mind blowing. You know what I mean? And so he's like, I get it. He doesn't really get it, but I think he's trying to humor me.
he's trying, bless him.
Yes. But you know, bless you, Duchovny, for going into that bathroom and rinsing your mouth out. Whether it was intentional or not, you have set aflame the fandom.
Totally. I will just say, rinsing his mouth out and wiping his mouth afterwards.
Yeah.
For me, it's the wiping his mouth afterwards that seals the deal for me.
You're right.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And like, yeah. And because, you know, we don't get the sex scene. Mm-hmm. We have to really just kind of like take everything we can get and piece it all together like a very important puzzle, which it is.
Mm.
We, like you say, we want to know what's in the repertoire. So it's very important to determine these things, and good fun too.
I mean, to my husband's point, which he was sort of trying to point out, is that this is sort of one of those things that comes standard. It's not like a crazy thing to think that this is happening.
And
I'm like, I understand this is exactly what happens, but it was just the idea that they would put something in the episode like that. I'm trying to kind of clarify that. I'm like, it's not the fact that it happened. We know that it happened. It's just the fact that they put this in the episode. That's pretty amazing. Yeah,
that is like, that's a gift. I'm gonna take that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take that as a gift to those of us that want to know the details. Thank you to whoever put that in there, because We're going to take everything we can get. We need to know all of the details.
All the details.
And yeah, there's a lot to go with there, in my opinion. That's not there for no reason. That's there for a reason, and I'm happy for that to be it.
And I love the idea. I mean, yeah, seeing the sex would have been great, but I love the idea that we get to see Mulder and Scully arguing over a case post-coitally. Like...
I love that.
They did that. We got that. That was amazing. Like, and you
I
know,
love it.
Her attitude too is just so like, it's fine. Come back to bed. And he's like totally panicking. And I just loved it. It was so perfect.
She is she cannot put a dimmer on that afterglow because it is burning bright. And like, girl, I totally get you. I would too in that situation.
And we all know why that afterglow
we do know exactly why.
Episode, whatever this is, we really should probably keep the track of this.
This is number 6, I think.
Oh wow, God, we've already done 6. That's awesome.
We are awesome.
We are. We got some in the can, and our
boom.
First one's dropping at midnight tonight. It's gonna be exciting.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna have a little bit of a break, and then I'm gonna start talking about it.
I'll wait for our toilet to stop running. Hang on. No, it's okay.
The perils of living in a house for podcasting is going
on.
Whoops.
It's okay.
I did something.
I know, he did something. It stopped. You're good. Go ahead and whenever you're ready.
Okay. Sorry, I was about to laugh there. Did I hear Mulder in the background?
Yes, and he's still being loud, but Mulder's here too, going, wow. With some more X-Files diaries.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, Mulder, you're so loud.
Sounds like you have a baby.
I know. Can you hear him sometimes throughout the thing while we're recording?
I could hear him occasionally, but I think it's going to be great. I love it. Your number 3 and my number 3 turned out to be the same because we're sharing a brain.
Because we're awesome. Let's hear it.
Yeah.
Mulder wants to hear it too.
I just want to use him as the musical cue.
Yeah, it's funny. I've rewatched the pilot several times over the past few months. I don't know why. It just keeps cropping up. But I continue to love it. It's like, it really holds up. It's not super dated. Oh my gosh. Sorry about my
cat.
That's
Boulder, isn't it?
He is so annoying. I apologize.
He's just so excited about the pilot.
He really is. He's very excited about the pilot. Wow. We're down to number two.
Number two. You're down, number two.
My number two. All right. Bring it.
Like he knows
he's loving our episode. Okay, all right, no, seriously, okay. Bring it. Okay, sorry, I need to pick him up and then I'll talk. Crater Hug.
I'm gonna do my number six. Okay, yeah. are you ready? Are you okay? Are you got your wine?
I got my wine. I'm good.
Is it turning into one of those episodes that is like, I'm gonna need more wine to get through the rest of this?
No, I just need wine to function through my evening, so I'm okay. Good.
Fair enough. I have a wholesome cup of tea. I'll just say that.
Oh, well, that's precious.
I'm so precious right now. I just wanted to keep my voice.
It sounds
so
about
much
right.
So it kind of does. We're going to do a whole episode. What do Andy and Jen drink while they are podcasting? And I think we just recorded it. So there we go. Bonus up for everybody.
Well, thanks you guys for listening. And we will be back with you in 2 weeks for another installment of The X-Files Diaries.